week, Nintendo disappoints those who paid way too much for an SNES Classic as some of its titles start coming into the Switch Online's SNES emulator. But really, are we surprised? This is just one headline where everything old is new again. Stay tuned for the rest, starting right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Orange Lounge Radio.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet, and welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio, live tonight with episode number 801 for this December the 8th of 2019. My name is Rob Roberts, and joining me here in our studio, as always, to talk about video games, gaming culture, the gamer lifestyle, and many, many, many tangents is Dark Sakura, or Jamie Summers.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Full,
yes. Thank you. I had the box sitting over here, but I just threw it away. But you brought me a little bit of panda. I mean,
I still have more panda if you want some green bean chicken.
Not panda meat, but panda the restaurant.
Yeah. But and I still have another egg roll left too.
Maybe later. I think I've had plenty enough for now. But yeah. So.
And all this, and I just realized that after I went and bought the food, that I'm making beef stew at home in a crock pot, like a big-ass thing of it.
Yep. Luckily, this show's like 3 hours long, so you might be hungry again by the time you get home.
Well, I started it at like 1.
Uh-huh.
So by the time I get home, it'll be good and ready, but like I forgot to put wine in it. Drink. So I actually made sangria with the rest of the wine because I don't like a Merlot, and it's a Merlot blend. But it's what I had because I gave away my Beaujolais. Mm-hmm. Beaujolais is my favorite red.
So I'm assuming you have like a crock pot sitting out with all this in it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It is the season for that type of cooking.
That's what I thought. But I made everything from scratch down to the broth.
Wow.
I made vegetable broth with my leftover veggie scraps.
Uh-huh.
And then I took that broth and cooked down soup bones.
Oh.
So there you go.
There you go. Cooking with Dark Sakura.
Yep.
Maybe a spinoff show coming soon to VOG. We'll see.
I kind of been thinking about it, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
I would love that. I will come over and help you film it to get some VODs for the Twitch channel and potentially YouTube. I think it would be fun.
I'll overtake Nerdy Nummies as the...
I think it should be you, but I think your co-stars should be puppets. And the puppets can be used by Techmaster Loki, also sitting here in studio.
I'm using the puppets?
No, like you're or the puppeteer.
Oh, I'm doing the puppeteer.
You're doing the puppets, yeah.
I think there's people that have done it way better than I have.
That's
I saw
true.
One of those today.
Yeah?
Who? Arlo.
Oh?
He's a YouTuber, but his character's a puppet.
Oh, okay.
And so like he was doing the panel today, and he has the puppet talking. It's cute.
Well, now, we couldn't talk about puppeteers and not acknowledge the passing, because a lot of people were talking about this today, the passing of the great Carol Spinney from Sesame Street, which is interesting. So for those that are watching on Twitch, and you always see those little – and for those listening on the podcast, we always have a little parody intro that's taken from the old TV show You Can't Do That on Television, where a show was preempted to bring you Orange Lounge Radio. So it's like a throwback to that. But usually these R's are video game themed for obvious reasons. So Jason is out of town or at an event today or something. So he usually does them on Sunday. But he told me yesterday, he's like, I gotta lock it in tonight because I'm doing this other thing tomorrow, which is fine. So I was like, what do I want to do? And a story about Streets of Rage 4 popped on my feed. And I was like, ooh, let's do Sesame Streets of Rage. Had no idea that so that was the little intro for tonight. Had no idea that unfortunate news about Carol Spinney would come across today. And I'm like, ooh, now does that look tacky? Luckily, I put Grover and Elmo in it. I didn't put Big Bird in it. So, or Oscar the Grouch, or I think, what was any of his characters?
Which is funny, as I had watched a YouTube video with him and with a few other people as to how the Muppets are operated.
Oh.
And so he was talking about how to activate, how to do Big Bird and also his understudy.
Yeah.
For Big Bird.
It's always fascinating when you see those behind the scenes of Sesame Street and you see like just how like the street is so elevated because obviously a lot of the puppeteering is happening underneath in like a basement type of thing. I don't know how else to describe
it. Like a trench.
Yeah, but it's
Well, that's how Alf was done. Did you know that?
How what?
Alf.
Oh, I'm not surprised at all.
But but it was apparently really dangerous for the cast because of all the various holes throughout the floor so that they could have it modular and move around with the puppet.
That's why blocking is important.
Blocking is very important.
With all the 80s and 90s things that are coming back, I just read a thing today that Reno 911, I guess, is coming back to some mobile app. Yeah, right? Although, I don't know. I was like, what the hell is this network? And it's some new mobile app. which is like short. I guess they're. I think they're trying to capitalize on TikTok, but it's like professional ones. It's because it's like 10-minute shorts. It's like short attention span theater. And I'm like, if Reno 911 is going to be 10-minute shorts, I don't know. Well, then again, I don't know. The original show kind of was a bunch of little vignettes. Just
Exactly.
So I'll be happy for an alternative to TikTok with their recent controversy.
Uh-huh.
You know about that, right?
Oh, with the whole China owns them. And, the LGBT content.
No, more than that. Not just LGBTQ plus, but anyone in any kind of disability spectrum.
Yeah.
What they think is people who could be prone to bullying, but what they're doing is actually silencing their voices.
Yeah, you know, I made a TikTok account because I wanted to support one of the local drag kings that I know that uses it. And
For Dawn?
For Dawn, yeah. And so because Dawn's doing a lot of content on TikTok. So I was like, okay, I'll follow Dawn. Shout out to Dawn Davenport, one of my faves, local drag king. So I wanted to follow Dawn's TikTok. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll get into this and I'll use it. And like the day after I posted my first TikTok, everybody was like, do you know that there's all these issues with this platform? And I was like, oh, well, maybe not. Like, I'll support Dawn and what Dawn wants to do, but maybe I'll stick to Twitch and some of the platforms that I'm using
now.
I'm
never making an account.
Yeah.
I'm still getting used to WT Social because it has a potential to really work, though, a lot like LiveJournal did.
Yeah, WT Social, I think, is way too complicated for the common person right now, and that's going to be very important if somebody is ever going to snatch Facebook's crown, is that I think you have to have a platform that's very easy to use. To tie this to video games, because I don't want you to think we're, like, we do talk about video games, believe it or not, live over at twitch.tv/VOG Network for Voice of Geeks Network, that's VOG Network, every Sunday night at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, right after the Bobby Blackwolf show. But to talk about social networking games, you know, I feel like what you see built into Xbox and Microsoft's platform, as well as the PlayStation 4, is heavily influenced by like a feed, like social media. Like you log on to your PlayStation, you see kind of a rolling feed of, here's what your friends are playing. Hey, Rob just unlocked a trophy. Dark Sakura just started playing Detroit for the first time, or whatever it happens to be, right? So it'll kind of show you what's going on. It's kind of interesting that, you know, all that is really confined to either the Xbox app or, you know, in Sony's case, you know, the Sony stuff. And it's not – they haven't tried to, like, push for anything bigger for, like, a gamer social network that, you know, ties into games. And, I mean, Nintendo, well, we all know they're never going to get
– insular.
They're just not – they're not going to get online. Like, it's just not going
to happen. Or not online the way people want them to be.
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised Microsoft hasn't really made a strong bid for the online social network space. Or have they? Did they buy some company I just forgot about that tanked?
I think they want it all to be in-network, some of these companies. They want you to have a reason to be exclusive to their system.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're just balling above all, and then you can do them all.
Well, think about it. If Microsoft were to do two key things, make Mixer more than just gaming, like Twitch has done. Make it more than – which I think – you can't – somebody can correct me in our chat if I'm wrong. I think you can do stuff that's non-gaming on Mixer, but that end of it has really not taken off like it has on Twitch. If you could kind of mix that on Mixer, with like a social network feed that Microsoft would run or whatever, I would think there's a lot of power in something like that to take on Facebook Live and everything that Facebook does. But it's just interesting. Microsoft kind of seems to be wanting to sit out of that space for whatever reason. So, okay, and Bobby confirms, thank you, Bobby, in our chat, yes, there are IRL Mixer streamers. I thought it was a thing, but you just don't, you don't hear about it on that space as much as you do on the Twitch side of things.
I was just thinking, in general, how we talk about live streaming,
mm-hmm.
and do you remember how there was this big thing going on, like, for Xerox in the 80s, where they're like, hey, don't use Xerox as a generic, you're gonna lose our branding.
Right.
And how, like, for some reason, like, mostly in England, when they referred to vacuuming as hoovering, and Hoover is really a brand.
Mm-hmm.
Now live streaming, people forget there was a site called Livestream.
Oh yeah, there was.
And that's where I used to stream my artwork when I was doing all my Mass Effect artwork. But now this term has become a generic for things that you do on Twitch and Mixer and all these other things. I was just thinking about it as like, do people actually remember the live stream site?
A similar type of thing happened to a podcasting because you know, it was called that in the beginning before it was ever in iTunes or Apple embraced it, because the concept was downloading, you know, audio iPod. RSS, which is what it is, downloading on audio RSS feed to your iPod. I mean, because this was even maybe before iPhones were really everywhere, even Android or whatever you want to say in that space, smartphones were everywhere. And then, you know, Apple embraced it as podcasting as well and really put that out there. And remember when Microsoft tried to get in it, they were like, it's Zunecasts, or other people would try to.
Stop trying to make Zune happen, okay?
But it didn't, like, that term podcast, like, it hasn't gone away. And now it's stuck.
Now it's the generic.
Google uses podcasts. Podcasts are now on Spotify. You know, even though technically it's audio RSS, that common thing of podcast is everywhere.
Well, it's just funny the way that the language works and branding works, really, to be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. When the branding is so strong, that's something that a company has to worry about. Well, even like Nintendo has to deal with that because, you know, how many times in, you know, the late 80s and mid 90s up to that, your video game system, no matter what it was just called a Nintendo.
Yeah.
Or in the South, how every soft drink is a Coke.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, now we're getting actually more into the business side of things. But I just thought it was funny that we talk about live streaming now, but who remembers the live stream website?
Right. But they weren't really the first, though,
no,
either.
They weren't, but they were probably the first big name in it.
Couple comments from chat. Let's see. I believe it was DJ Rama S said, the site is actually still around. Vimeo bought live stream. So technically, it's still around. Some folks talking about Ustream there. And Bobby wanted to point out that podcasting, what they've done, what the culture has done to embrace the term, even if, you know, you're like, I'm not touching Apple products or whatever you want to do. Podcasting is for portable on demand. So pod.
Justify it to yourself however you want to.
So let's see. Pod culture says just try and find a damn Pepsi in Atlanta next to Impossible. Hard Rock Cafe. Bobby and I learned that one Dragon Con. Hard Rock Cafe still has Pepsi products at Atlanta for whatever reason.
I used to know where all the Pepsi products were in Mobile because I am not a Coke fan.
Uh-huh.
I will drink a Coke if that's what's there, but I prefer Pepsi.
Yeah.
I'm saying this right now. I would probably end up murdered by Victoria.
Uh-huh. No, I know. I understand.
But no, I'm a Pepsi product kind of girl. I miss Josta.
I prefer
Bring me back, Josta.
Plain Pepsi. But I think the flavored Cokes, like they have that blood orange Coke, the cinnamon Coke was actually pretty good, the solid one. They have all these different, the vanilla Coke, of course. I think all the flavors.
Vanilla Pepsi existed, though.
It did, but I actually still preferred vanilla Coke, believe it or not. All the flavored Cokes are better. There's that orange vanilla
Coke
Zero. That's really
now,
good.
Now, what I did like, though, was peach Coke that was out in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
I managed to pick it up at Nijiya Market in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And I should have stocked up on that, even though it was full of sugar. It was delicious. And I hate peaches, too, which is weird.
Akuma JP from Japan in our chat says, I thought Coke was the name of the drinks. Coca-Cola is the brand. Coke is the name of the company. No, Coca-Cola. How does it work?
Coca-Cola is the name of the company. And when people
lead drink is Coke.
Right. Well, and actually, the drink is technically Coca-Cola as well.
Right.
But people would shorten it to Coke because, you know, like you do. And so they ended up incorporating that into their branding.
Right. With Coke 2.
And Coke
LOL,
Zero.
Coke Classic.
It's Coca-Cola Classic.
Oh, is it? I thought
it is.
Okay, interesting.
But there was New Coke,
mm-hmm.
and that was trying to be edgy, and right. now we have Coke Zero.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to say that your diet is, it'll either be Diet Coke or Diet Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in some places it's actually Coca-Cola Light.
Mm.
Or, I don't know. I know that Pepsi is technically Pepsi-Cola
right.
by brand and by beverage, but it's their branding.
And this interesting Metal Mayhem in chat says Coke is to Coca-Cola like Rob is to Robert. Yeah, I guess that kind of works. I would say cola is the generic name. That's why you have things like RC Cola and Pepsi Cola is really what it
because
is.
Because a cola is a type of beverage made right. from the certain ingredient,
mm-hmm.
which is why Dr. Pepper isn't marketed as a cola.
Right. Okay, wow. We got into brand discussion here on Orange Lounge. What can we say? It's a slower... Are you shaking your head over there? It's a slower news week.
And don't forget Tiger Claw, who brings up Pepsi Zero. Don't forget in the 80s, if you remember, your Back to the Future was Pepsi free.
RIP Crystal Pepsi. Although...
Yeah, it can stay buried.
In the version from the 90s, because when it came back, I was like, damn, this is really sugary. This is
You know
rough.
What, though?
Huh.
One time after marching in Mardi Gras.
Uh-huh.
So this is... I was in 11th grade.
All right, last tangent, then we're getting to games.
They decided, because this was when Crystal Pepsi was starting to go away, they just gave us all cases of Crystal Pepsi to drink after it, and we were so tired and worn out after all that marching. We devoured all of it. It was gone.
Nice.
yeah, and that's my story of Crystal Pepsi and Mardi Gras.
Okay, perfect.
It's also the same year I got beamed in the head with a moon pie.
Let's keep talking about brands. Why not? Let's stay on the brand message for a little bit here at the top of the show. See, it actually does relate a little bit to what I want to talk about here at the top of the show, because a big brand in gaming is celebrating their 25th anniversary this week. So this is going to make a lot of you out there go, fuck, I'm old, especially like if you're in your 30s and you might remember when you were a kid when the PlayStation first launched, or you're me and you're in your 40s and you remember in high school when the PlayStation 1 first launched. So the PlayStation celebrates 25 years this week, and Sony has embraced the anniversary a little bit. They've labeled this on all their social media accounts, of course, asking the questions, you know, what's your favorite PlayStation game or PlayStation memory? And I will ask here in studio a little bit your memories of your first PlayStation console or first experience with PlayStation. I'll come back to that in a minute. You can answer that in chat as well. But also, they put together a nice little four-minute video that was like 1 second of a bunch of major PlayStation games. It would be an opportunity for me to play that here on Twitch. But that video is like 4 minutes long, and you can go check that out on PlayStation's channel if you want.
The really important thing, though, that we should mention because of all of these festivities is that CEO Kaz Hirai came out and made another comment on Twitter, and that's perfect.
Oh, the retired comedy account.
Yes.
What did they say?
They congratulated all the Sony brands. Of course, not mentioning the Vita because it's hilarious.
Yeah, and isn't that interesting that Vita was left out of that video and PSP and all that stuff, right? If I'm not mistaken, weren't that left out of the video? I think it was. Anyhow. They put out a neat little video and celebrating, you know, the 25 years of PlayStation. Some interesting stories have come out about how, you know, that boot up noise on the original PlayStation was actually a method of detecting if that was an authentic disc that was in there or not, which you probably figured out if you ever put in a non-Sony CD, like a type of thing in there, like an audio CD. You would hear that little boo doo doo doo, but you wouldn't hear the little whoosh and the kind of clip in reverse. You wouldn't hear the second half of it because it would go right into the audio CD player when you would get that kind of thing.
Don't try me, because I have that as a ringtone on my phone. It was my alarm for the longest time.
Well, I'm kind of surprised that the Sony accounts, or maybe I missed it, which is fine, didn't mention that there actually is a PlayStation 4 theme that you can, like, make a classic. And it actually – so when you turn on your PlayStation 4, it actually makes that little boot up noise mm-hmm. when it goes into the menu. Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
All right, but I need to now not use that anymore. Sorry, it's loud.
Probably came over really distorted on the mic, but that's all right.
I'm just going to turn it down while I –
For those of you that had to put your PlayStation on channel 3 or 4, it was probably distorted too. Let's see. So Bobby Blackwolf says, I use that PlayStation 1 theme on my PlayStation 4s. Yeah, I was for the longest time. I finally switched it to something themed around a game that I was really into. And Orange Wright says, I use that PlayStation 1 theme for a long time. Yeah, it's a good theme. Go find it if you don't already have it. I don't think it was a limited time theme. I think it was released to coincide with – do you remember about a year into the PlayStation 4's life, they came out with a classic PlayStation kind of shell for it that was gray and it was in the different colors? It might have been – honestly, it might have been like a 20th anniversary thing.
Stop it. What are
you – you playing on your phone over there?
No, I was trying to get it back to the ringtone I had, which is the Link to the Past Dark World mm-hmm. music.
VidPower in chat says, who here remembers taking out the game CD after this sound and putting in their import game right afterwards?
Who is the one who taught a certain other person in this room how to do it?
Yeah. Well, Dark Soccer, I was going to say, when it comes to game piracy, when it comes to the import games,
import
specifically.
We were really crazy on
our
PlayStation.
You were really good
imports.
At that. Well, you didn't teach me that trick as much as you did
the
plug.
Because I had I showed you how to do the paperclip trick.
Yeah, you did show me the paperclip trick, too.
And then I eventually got that thing, because remember Dan and I hunted up and down for the last PlayStation that had the I.O. port on it, mm-hmm. and KB Toys had one, and we bought it, because mm-hmm. we had to like start using our PlayStation on the side to be able to play anything. So we bought that one, and there was, I think it was the Game Shark, was it?
Something like that. It was like a Game Shark type of thing.
That had like the reader and then the spring on it to where it would keep it depressed.
It was not a Game Shark, but it was like a Game Shark. It was like the Game Shark plugged into there too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Dan could do like the multi-disc swap one too.
Yeah.
So.
And I want to make it clear, I don't endorse piracy, but at that time it was very much like, okay, if you're not going to release the game in the States, I'm sorry, then I'm going to just download the Japanese one and play it that way. I'll buy it if it's released, but I'm not paying those import fees.
I didn't even download them. I purchased HK copies.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's bootleg copies.
Uh-huh.
And to this day, I will stand by my decision to always buy black DVD-Rs because those would read better in a PlayStation.
Yeah.
Although you cannot use them for burning PC Engine games, just saying you have to have a thick archive level disc, either that or tape pennies to your disc for it to be able to read it.
Wow.
Because the discs for the PC Engine games are so thick and heavy.
Yeah.
You have to use disc as heavy.
Interesting.
The weight of it does matter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, the more you know.
The more you know.
Anyway, obviously.
Adventures in Piracy.
Now that consoles are generally region free, obviously that's not really an issue anymore.
Well, and now you can get the the EverDrives.
Mm-hmm. And like, so much is released worldwide, too.
I mean, our PC Engine EverDrive will play CD games.
Yeah.
So, and it's actually nice because although we do have a few games that I would like to be able to get the CD add-on for our core graphics so that we can get a Japanese arcade card, because we have a few arcade card games that we can't play because arcade cards don't work with the converter.
You know, it's interesting. The Sony PlayStation was a huge part of how we in this room kind of all met. And, you know, I know it sounds like we talk a lot about this import stuff. But remember, this show was really founded because of our mutual love in this room here of music-based video games. And the only way you could play Dance Dance Revolution at home was on a PlayStation with an import copy. They did release a Dance Dance Revolution USA and a Konamix. I mean, there were some USA versions later on. But, like, realistically, the song lists weren't really as good. Those song lists didn't start getting good until like Xbox and PlayStation 2, when they started getting things
Third
like
Mix was pretty good.
The different drum label. I know, but that was PlayStation 2. When they got like Kylie Minogue.
Third Mix was PS1.
Oh no, Third Mix was great, but I'm saying the US releases on PS1 were not good. Technically they were fine, but the song lists weren't great. But yeah, it was all about playing Third Mix on an import PlayStation using
the
swap trick or
something. And we used your Mickey Mouse dance pads.
No, it was the Jungle Book.
That was the Jungle Book dance. They were small. Yeah. And then trying not to, you know, totally fuck up your under apartment neighbors.
Yeah, right.
That was fun.
It was good times. So we all met with that, because when we met, I mean, when OLR started, the PlayStation 2 was a lot more like, you know, prevalent. More of us had them when OLR started. But I would say when we were first hanging out meeting, because OLR didn't start. What year did we all meet? That would have probably been early 2001. When we all met. So, like, I think PlayStation 2 was, like, just coming out, but, like, we didn't all own it yet, so we were still kind of on the last wheels of the original PlayStation then, playing all these, you know, Beat Mania, Guitar Freaks, and all the stuff that was, you know, original Bomani stuff on PlayStation. So it was obviously a lot of big early memories in that regard. Dartitsuya says 2000, 2001... 2001 was the year I lived at Melrose Place with them who shall not be named. But I want to say that was earlier in the year, like March or whatever. So I must have met you guys. Maybe it was like late 2000, actually, when I met all you guys. So, yeah, because remember I lived at that place for like 6 months? But I ended up moving out in like October or November. So
yeah, that was where I played like a crap ton of WonderSwan games.
Yep.
Because your roommate had the WonderSwan games that I wanted to play.
Yeah.
And Beat Mania for WonderSwan.
Yeah.
Which was fun.
Mm-hmm.
That's a game I wouldn't mind picking up again, is Beat Mania for WonderSwan, but I'd have to have the little scratch pad.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway. We all met, really, thanks to the PlayStation era. So, outside of those type of memories, I want to ask you guys kind of here to celebrate 25 years of PlayStation and make you feel old. What are some of your early PlayStation memories? Loki.
Well, I remember I bought the PlayStation for Final Fantasy VII, so it would have been playing that. And then, I don't know, I used to, it was one of the games, or game systems I used to drag with me to high school all the time. So I actually had a carrying case for it, and I'd bring in the PlayStation demo discs, and I'd play, like, the Cool Borders 2 demo, like, a billion times. I don't even know if it was the second Cool Borders. That may have been the first Cool Borders game. So, yeah, a lot of that. And then I remember one birthday party because I knew you could do it. And that's why they had those stupid serial ports on there anyways. You can system link games. And so one game that supported that was Bushido Blade, I think. And it makes it into this weird, like, first-person game. Like, you run through, like, a maze and you attack each other that way. But it's a versus mode, which is really odd. But I did it because I wanted to see what it was, and then I was horribly disappointed by it. But but for one birthday party, I had a friend bring over his, you know, his PlayStation. We had two TVs, and we hooked up that System Link cable, and we were able to do that.
I'm reading some comments from chat. ActDef says, Jumping Flash is probably my earliest PlayStation 1 memory. My brother-in-law had a PlayStation 1 with that demo disc, and I played it a whole lot whenever I was at his house. And then a lot of folks in chat talking about demo discs. Remember that era?
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Demo discs with Mac. That was the time. Those are the days, man.
I have a lot of early PlayStation memories, though, because it came out when I was in college. And although my friend's like, wait, I'm importing a Sega Saturn. Hell yeah, I want to play your Sega Saturn. What's this Gundam game here? But at any rate, I didn't own a PlayStation until I moved out here. But I owned Final Fantasy VII when it came out. And my roommate's boyfriend didn't want his PlayStation at home because he was in his like graduate classes or something. So it was hooked up to my little 13-inch TV. And we played a shit ton of Toshinden. A shit ton of Jumping Flash, and really just a shit ton of Toshinden. Really a lot of Toshinden.
Mm-hmm. Bobby Blackwolf says, I feel like I should stream those PlayStation Underground discs. Hell yeah. Like 25th anniversary, this is the time to be doing something like that. Swang Tong posts a memory of going to Walden Books and all the PSMs were ripped and the demo discs were gone.
Oh, yes. That was the worst.
That was the worst.
That's why you had to subscribe to it.
Questbuster saying, on Loki's story, I remember taking our PlayStation on vacation one time and hooked it up to the room TV. When the weather was trash, we stayed inside and played Xenogears. So, nice. Love it. Let's see. So my earliest PlayStation memory, I finally bought PlayStation. I bought it because I knew Final Fantasy VII was going to be coming out on it, and I kind of wanted one. I was actually more into the stuff on PlayStation than I was Nintendo 64 at the time, and I was always a very loyal like Nintendo guy. Like I loved Super Nintendo and the original Nintendo, but I wasn't really feeling like the polygon 3D stuff. Like it just wasn't what I was into at the time. I appreciate it later, certainly, but you know at the time I wasn't super feeling it. So which I know is ironic because the polygon stuff was huge on the CD games, but I don't know. It was really weird. Seeing things like Mario and that stuff like on the Nintendo 64. But obviously I was a huge Final Fantasy stan at the time, and I still am. And so when they said Final Fantasy VII was going to make the jump to PlayStation, I kind of followed and I bought a PlayStation. Eventually I bought a Nintendo 64. I bought one when they came down to like $20. There was a Pikachu one that you turned it on and the lights lit up his little cheeks. But anyway, that's Nintendo. As far as Sony goes, I remember saving up the money. Or no, I used my Christmas money to go to the warehouse.
Ah, yes.
If you remember that chain. And bought the PlayStation along with Crash Bandicoot 2. That was the first game I really remember playing. So that was my early on experience with PlayStation. And then when I went off to college, I can't tell you how much class I missed to stay behind and play Final Fantasy VII. Puzzle Fighter, whatever the hell the name of that, Super Puzzle Fighter 2 Turbo or whatever parody name they gave that. Puzzle Fighter was a huge time sink in college. I shudder to think about all the time I lost to that game, but that was a huge influential game on PlayStation. And then obviously later on, as we talked about, all the music-based games and DDR and Beatmania and stuff was really huge later on and influential into the show that we have now. So big thanks to PlayStation for making that all happen. Appreciate that. So any other PlayStation memories y'all want to throw out there before we move on to our next topic?
A lot of Final Fantasy VII.
A lot of Final Fantasy VII, I know.
Making
and then it was...
a sandwich during Knights of the Round with Quadra Magic and repeat.
But not, you know what? Not everything was roses when it came to PlayStation because I hated Legend of Mana. That was the PlayStation Mana game, right? I hated it.
I had an import of it.
I didn't care for it.
And it was way too text heavy for me.
Yeah. So not everything on PlayStation. And I did not care for Chrono Cross. And this is not some silly throwback to our fight about what the best Super Nintendo game is of all time. Because I do appreciate, I certainly love Chrono Trigger and appreciate that game. I was not into Chrono Cross when I played that. So PlayStation had some odd sequels, especially on the Square Enix side of things. But that was my opinion. Although with Chrono Cross, it did still have a killer soundtrack. We all know Scars of Time. It was one of the all-time greatest songs. So, you know, there is that. So. All right. Well, moving on to things a little more recent, let's talk a little bit about our gaming weeks as we get into a segment called How Is Your Gaming Week? And what types of video games have you been playing this week? Although I'm noticing as we're broadcasting live on Twitch, I'm missing that from the sidebar, so I should probably add that right now.
Oopsie.
While we talk to Dark Sakura about her gaming week.
Well, I was playing some Pokemon Sword, which I was pretty happy about. I've beat my second gym. I'm just taking my time with it. I'm enjoying it, leveling my Pokemans, you know, doing the stuff. I have my Farfetch'd now, my whatever Galarian's Ash level it's called. What do they call the...
Sirfetch'd?
No, I don't have a Sirfetch'd yet.
The Farfetch'd?
I have the Farfetch'd for that area. And it's like Galarian.
Galarian or whatever.
I've just been calling it Galarian, like the speaking of old PlayStation games.
It's
Galarians
like,
was great.
You're supposed to say like Galar region or I don't know how you really pronounce
Galar.
It. Galar region.
Yeah.
Like Alola regionals is Galar regional, but whatever you say.
My brain can't wrap around it, so I've been calling it Galarians. So, and then I think of making people's heads explode, kind of like, because Galarians to me was the head exploding game, like the movie Scanners, or was it Scanners or Trancers? Whatever movie it was that made people's heads explode, I think it was Scanners. But anyway, I've been playing that. We have another pinball in my house that we are borrowing, which is Elvira Scared Stiff, which I thought it was being taken out of my house on Thursday, and I texted Rob in a tizzy, "You missed your chance!"
It would have been my own
fault,
I guess.
And it turned out that Dan actually loaned out probably the least favorite machine and his favorite that we own, which is Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Mm.
I don't like Creature. It's just annoying. I did play a crapload of pinball because Dan did League Night, and I made a lot of cookies for that. I slacked off a lot on my mobile gaming this week just because I've had a headache like that's lasted me since I was sick from the week before. And I just staring at screens is just making my eyes hurt. So I've been trying to avoid doing that too much except for playing Pokemon, which is easier with the ambient lighting in the room. And then I've been playing a lot of Chase the Cat around the house. I don't know, but she's just like really been super playful. And it's been nice to kind of be distracted from the digital just by playing with, you know, my furry little pain in the ass. Midna's been super affectionate lately.
Cute.
Yeah. My boo-boo.
Anything else for the gaming week?
Uh-uh.
All right.
One weird thing that happened, and apparently I'm not the only one this happened to. My Facebook set up in a different language this morning. I logged in, and it was in German.
Honestly, it's doing you a favor, keeping you out. I would love it if mine did that, too.
Well, it actually, a friend of mine logged in, and his was in Spanish. So, and I know I have two-factor on, so it's not like anyone can go ahead and change it for me.
I'm really hovering on the fence. Like, I kind of want to, as a New Year's resolution or whatever you call it, like going into a new decade, I really want to get rid of Facebook.
I can't.
But see, I realize that the problem with it is it's twofold, is that it's way too good for promotional stuff. Like, that's the reality. Like, if I want to promote, hey, I'm hosting Rocky Horror, or hey, I'm doing this thing, or hey, I'm broadcasting Orange Lounge Radio, like, Facebook remains a strong place to do that, because without it, like, I can't, like, my friends and family, I know they all check it. Like, it's hard. I mean, yes, I can send an email, I can send a letter,
Instagram,
sure, I can do all these other things. It's not part of people's habitual routine like Facebook is. And then the other thing that's, like, really kind of keeping me on there is Messenger. Because
our fan pages.
Yeah, well, I don't have a fan page.
We have the Orange Lounge.
Oh, the Orange Lounge Radio has a fan page. Yeah.
And I have a fan page.
Mm-hmm.
And I do post to my fan page fairly regularly.
Mm-hmm.
I also, my Instagram is linked to my Facebook. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I've really done it is because I have friends on there that I have no other way to get in contact with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So
yeah, I'm on the fan. One day, and to be fair, one day I'll be like, I'm deleting Facebook, I'm deleting everything. Then the next day I'll be like, I should make a Rob Roberts fan page so I can put all of my blasts on that particular thing and not my personal feed or whatever. And then I can sift through my friends list a little bit and cut out people that I don't know.
I also have a page as a sister. for doing sister stuff. But I'm actually legit thinking of going back to LiveJournal, officially back to LiveJournal. I have a permanent account. Why the fuck not?
So do I.
And honestly, people are like, oh, the Russians are going to get your information. They're not. Not really.
They already have it.
You know, it, and they still have to adhere to the European standard for privacy, which is a lot more stringent than the American standards are.
True enough.
So I'm honestly thinking about going completely back to LiveJournal for all my stuff.
Renaissance 2020. Let's make it happen. All right. Anyway, back to video games. Sorry. Loki, I know you had a very busy day, especially.
So I went to a local gaming expo called Sac Gamer Expo. So we saw a lot of people and played a lot of things. So talking with some of the stuff I saw. So they had the Sega Pluto 1 prototype, which apparently was an unreleased variant of the Sega Saturn that you could look at it. Obviously, it wasn't doing anything, but it was still neat to see. Is huge, had a top-loading disk drive, and then they had a cartridge slot, which was like a memory card slot, or memory slot, I guess, like in the Saturn. And then, what else? Got autographs from Kenny James and Kellen Goff. So Kenny James is the voice of Bowser, which my kids are like, Bowser talks? I'm like, well, he growls. I mean, that's sort of, you know, like it. So we got his
the laugh.
Yeah, so yeah, he did the laugh. And then of course Kellen Goff, my son was very excited about, because he does the voice of several of the Freddy characters in Five Nights at Freddy. So he did Funtime Freddy, Molten Freddy, Freddy Fazbear, and Fredbear.
Yeah, Kellen's great. I met him and I did a panel with him at Dragon Con when I did that Five Nights panel at Dragon Con.
So awesome.
He's great. Yeah. So one of these days I'll try to get him on the show, just talk about all that.
Yeah,
stuff.
So we got to meet him and got an autograph and stuff like that. What else? So I played quite a few games. We went through I kind of have it broken up with just like the exhibitors, which is mostly just like people selling like vintage gaming stuff and anime things and all that. And they had the indie developers section, which wasn't as big as the event that I went to in September, but that was strictly indies in there. So we did play some of the games that were there. There was the zombie game from last time there, so my kids played that for quite a bit. They had a few other games I checked out. There was a guy from San Jose who had a game that looked pretty cool. It was kind of like a slime puzzle game, but they had it set up in full-size arcade cabinets, which is pretty cool. So I got to check that out. What else? So vintage gaming stuff went through. I played a little bit of Mega Race on the 3DO, which last time I played Mega Race was on PC on my single-speed external CD drive. So that was kind of fun to go back and play that and have my kids play that. Played a little bit of Mario Clash on the Virtual Boy. Just kind of like every single thing that they had there. A little bit of DuckTales. What else? They had the sewing machine there. I don't remember which.
I'm sad I missed it.
Yeah, so they had the sewing machine there, and Rob, of course, and they
the
even
right here.
No, not me. The robot.
The robot. Yeah. Yes, and they even had this thing for the Super Nintendo. It was like a full size AR. That was like some military training thing. They were showing that, which is pretty cool. And what else? Almost, because I had already spent enough money as it was getting autographs for my kids. But then they also had one of the artists, Mark Erickson, who's a freelance illustrator who did artwork on a lot of box art that you might be familiar with. For example, Mega Man 2.
The American one.
The bad box Mega Man.
But Bad Box Mega Man was under direction from a great, like, you know, yes. We can't blame this guy for.
No, it wasn't his fault. But the NES Strider, Bad Dudes, they even had Tetris, Choplifter, and Heavy Barrel and Bulk 3.
Dang. Jamie, cover your ears for a second. I miss the NES Strider. I love that game.
Oh, wait. I'm not mad about the 80s Strider.
The NES Strider?
Well, because it was based on the manga.
Oh, okay, that's right. Okay, I know for you the arcade is like.
But
the arcade
Strider is the Strider.
But okay. I was this close had I had enough extra money to buying a poster size Bad Box Mega Man 2 signed by the artist. for the studio.
We could use some freshening up of the OLR decorum. Maybe for next year we're going to sub out some of these posters.
Rob?
Because I mean, I love me some Kingdom Hearts, but Poppin Music 11, you guys, like,
Rob?
That's old.
That's
Rob.
Final Fantasy 11.
Talk about 25 years of PlayStation.
Rob.
What?
I was going to get this for you as a holiday present, and it didn't arrive until after I'd already bought the rest of your present.
Okay.
So I'm just going to go ahead and tell you what I got you.
Uh-huh.
Aw. I got you a Commodore 64 schematic poster.
Oh, cool.
And I'm just trying to find an 11 by 14 frame.
Oh, perfect. Perfect.
So it, instead...
Oh, frames, though, lights aren't going to take well to it. So,
well, then I'll just give you the... Or we can get like a matte...
Yeah, something that won't, you have to be mindful of the light.
But yeah, but it was what I initially had ordered, and then they said, oh, it's not going to arrive until well after, so I got other presents, and then it arrived.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to go ahead and tell you. So it's now an OLR gift.
But then the other thing.
Speaking of gifts, I need to talk about what the husband got me, because all of you that have been listening for a little while are going to laugh at what the husband got me for a gift. While I talk about that, you talk about your little
So the other statue. Thing I saw that at the vendor area that I had to get is a 3D printed Untitled Goose Game Goose.
That is great.
And it has a bell. I had to get it for my desk because it's awesome. They had several. They had one with the bow. They had the bell. They had one with nothing. But you got to get the bell because it rings.
Did you ever watch The Boundary Break for the Untitled Goose Game?
Yes.
I want one of his wings all like... I want foldable wings.
I brought in the box because the actual device is way too heavy.
Lord.
But it is a battery backup. It's a UPS to actually plug things into so that if the power ever goes out, we have an opportunity to save the video and all that good stuff. I don't have to go to Twitch Archive or any of those other workarounds. So he was like... I think it's something that wasn't exactly on your list, but you're going to find it really useful. So props to Alan. And all of you out there that like to make fun of the lack of a UPS here in OLR Studio can now officially shut the fuck up. Thank you. Somebody fill time while I take this back. Oh, yes, yeah. The rest of your con, Loki.
Yeah. Yes, and then the other thing we saw, like I said, I was trying to get my kids to be more interested in, because they wanted to see YouTubers, but they don't know who these YouTubers are. But they have like Arlo there, which he's, I think pretty well known. He's a Nintendo brand ambassador. You may know him because he is actually, his character is a puppet. And so they had the guy that voices Arlo and he's doing the puppet during the actual, Q&A, which I thought was really cute. But, you know, it was cool. Overall, it was nice. The weather could have been better. They had a marathon that was running through Sacramento, and that really blocked everything off. So you had to go way around everything to get to the actual convention, which kind of sucked. I also played VR. They had Beat Saber, and they also had that I don't remember what it's called, but I think it's the plank. It's the one where you go up an elevator, and then you have to balance on a plank, and you could fall. And it's supposed to be scary, but because it's actually a like it's a tiny piece of wood on the ground, but it's very convincing. I didn't do that because it was $10. I'm like, no.
Bobby says Richie's Plank Experience.
Yes. I'm not paying money for that. I'll play free VR. I'm not paying for that.
Okay. Create it. Unless it's maybe a fundraiser or something. If it's $10.
No,
it's donated to teaching kids code or something.
No, it's nothing like that. It was just they're there to make money.
Well, that's, yeah, a little different.
So
I find it very strange to was it the creators of the game there?
No. It's a VR center. They come and they demo VR and they give out like 15-minute coupons for like VR's time.
Personal interjection, I think that's kind of shady if it ain't your game and you didn't design the VR headset. Like, I get they're trying to promote their center or whatever, but charging money for that, like, this is America. This is those type of things. I realize a lot of like Dave and Buster's-esque type of places, what's that place? They charge for VR and stuff. I just think it's a little, you know, like where's the cut that's going to the people that made that game? Anyway.
Well, they would argue it's the cut that they purchased the game from Steam or whatever for the license. But...
Yeah. And Bobby says that game is $15 on Steam. That's way too much.
Yeah. So it's $10 to play. The reason that I guess they're justifying that is because they had to buy a Vive. The Vive Pro to run it or some stupid crap.
Donate the money to helping kids code or something useful. Anyway.
Yeah.
My opinion.
Because my kids were like, I was like, oh, yeah, we can try it. And they're like, well, ask your dad if it's okay to play. Like, I thought they were saying, oh, because they're too little for VR. I'm like, oh, no, that's cool. And they're like, it's $10. I'm like, Nope. That's going to be a no. We'll go in the line and play free Beat
Saber.
But
I will spend the money on a goose. Honk. There's where your VR experience went, kids. The goose strikes again. Honk.
Exactly.
I love it. All right. So it sounds like you had a good time at the show.
Yeah, it was all right.
The local shows are usually fun. I don't know why I didn't go to the one today.
It was okay.
Like
it was like, you know, there was a lot of like, everything was like very expensive. Like the tickets to get in were really cheap because it was like $10 for an adult. Kids like under a certain age get in free. And like I probably could have got both of my kids in for free. But like it's everything else on top of it that's super expensive. Like they had a food truck out there. It was like $30 for lunch.
Oh,
it was
God.
Ridiculous. And the food wasn't that great.
That's where those things really make their money though. Like I don't want to say too much, but I know people that do conventions and it's much more about getting people in the door for those types of things, and then you're making money off the tables that people are renting, but you need to be able to provide them business
To be fair though, they did give away some free posters and I got a really nice the Bowser poster was someone drew it in like an anime style, and so it's like Bowser as Godzilla, so they have like a helicopter attacking him and stuff, and it's really kick ass. And then they had an anime Peach that I got. I'm gonna frame one for my kids' room, so that kind of evened it out a little bit because those are really cool and they're free. But yeah, I mean, I like all the game stuff there was so expensive. Like I would have partaken in more stuff, but it's just I didn't have the money. And like autographs too, like $30 a pop, you know, it adds up. So.
It does. All right. Anything else?
No, that's it.
My gaming week. So last week I played a lot of games, and this week I kind of don't have as much to talk about in that department because I kind of kept playing those same games. For example, I was continuing on in Pokemon Shield. Those Snorlax raids came out. I did a couple of those today. Didn't catch it, which was depressing. It was hard to fill parties for that, which is really depressing because the NPCs are really stupid. So again, the Nintendo's online system and the whole way that's designed with the – and I realize this is part of the design of the Pokemon game as well is really holding that whole end of it back. Like it needs to be easier to find and join raids and stuff than it is currently. It's silly. Especially when you're going to be promoting these types of limited time events that are pretty hard. So just my opinion. Otherwise, I still feel Pokemon Shield's a strong title, and I'm continuing to work on my decks a little bit, but I'll save some of that for some live streaming as well, because I was trying to be a good boy and do more Twitch streams this week. I did like a Final Fantasy 14 stream a little earlier this week, so there was that. Let's see, other things that I played this week. I also played a little more Death Stranding, a little more Final Fantasy 14, getting into Gathering, Botany, was trying to level that up because one of my friends was like, oh, you're doing it wrong. You need to be doing scripts. Do collectibles for yellow scripts and the levels will fly by. And that's very true. I've been working on that a little bit. Then, of course, some of my other old standbys. I was playing a lot of Pokemon Go this week. I was hanging out with a friend, and we walked all around downtown, caught a ton of Pokemon. No shinies for me. My friend caught a shiny Eevee randomly. Even better. You know what I think is even better than shinies? 100% IV Pokemon. So I did catch a 15-15-15 Ralts. Finally, a useful 100%er that I caught in the wild. So that was very cool. So I was very, very happy about that. So that was a little Pokemon Go. And then I played a little bit of Harry Potter, Wizards Unite, because of the event. And then I was playing a little bit of Ingress. So I'll actually talk about that. So, you know, I've been playing Ingress for years. Mm-hmm. But there was actually an event that happened on Saturday. So we went over to Oakland, even though it was like pouring rain and like what a ridiculous thing to do. But there was kind of a lot of stuff. Like if I went, it would be my sixth hack of the traveling van that was going to be there, and that gets you a special reward or a special like in-game badge. And then I'm like, you get double AP for playing, and I was also just shy of 10,000 unique hacks. So I was like, oh, if I go, I could get my 10,000th unique hack as a part of the event because you get a little badge in game for it. So to kind of relate that to Pokemon Go terms, that's like spinning 10,000 unique stops. That's what I just did in Ingress this week, 10,000 unique places. So That was kind of an accomplishment. But what was kind of neat about it, so the actual Ingress event, the play time where you're kind of just trying to get AP as fast as you can, that was scheduled between 1 and 3 p.m. So it overlapped with the Pokemon raid event, right, which started at 11, right?
Yeah.
So in the noon hour, we were down on the pier and we were raiding. There were two gyms like practically on top of each other. Both had Charizards. So we were raiding the Charizards. As we're raiding the Charizard, this guy in a Niantic jacket walks by and says, "Hey, you guys doing the mission?" And we're like, "No, we're raiding the Charizard." And my friend recognizes him. I didn't recognize him at first. My friend recognized him as John Hankey, the CEO of Niantic. So he was at the event because he's based in the Bay Area. I mean, that's no surprise. And it was really neat. He's like, "Oh, I'm out doing the mission," or whatever. We're like, "Hey, can we get a selfie? But we're doing the Charizard raid right now." He's like, "Yeah, no problem. I'm going to go get this portal over here and then I'll come back." So he's actually out there playing Ingress, and he's laughing that we're doing the Charizard raid. You know, obviously it's like, "Ha ha, line my pockets." No, it wasn't that. he was like really chill. It was cool. So, and then he came by and took a picture, and, you know, we just kind of said, "Hey," and just, you know, greeted him, and we were talking a little bit about the event. Like, "Good to see you. Didn't know you'd be out today." And yeah, he was just kind of out there playing like everybody else. So I thought that was really, really cool. I like that. The Niantic staff. I hear a lot of the staffers in Los Angeles were at there was another First Saturday event that happened in Los Angeles, and I think a lot of staffers were at that one too. So I think it's really cool that Niantic people are like getting out in the wild, going to some of the Ingress events. I realize Pokemon Go is their moneymaker, but Ingress, you know, was kind of like their first. You never forget your first.
It's also nice that you can enjoy something that you made, because like I can imagine, especially with like Ingress having worked on it for so long, it might get like, ugh, I don't want to play this anymore, you know? So it's nice to see that they're still enjoying their work.
Yeah, and even – and I have my own problems with Ingress, and just the fact that, like, amongst this forced move to Prime, that really a lot of the player base is not happy with Prime. I'm fine with it, but I do realize there's certain key things I miss, like force sync, like basic things that aren't there. But I felt like this whole move to Prime was to introduce new features and new things. So I'm a little disappointed that still has not shown up. And I'm like, I'm losing a little bit of patience, but events are always worth coming out for. And at the same time, they were testing some type of event in LA.
Hmm.
So they actually were doing like what they called a flashpoint event at the LA thing. So I guess they're trying. It's just a little slow to come by, but I imagine, you know, again, Pokemon Go is where they're making their money. There's probably 20 people working on Pokemon Go. There's probably 4 that are working on Ingress. You know, it's probably not, you know, I understand it's more their pet project, but without it, I don't think you'd have the quality stops that you have now, because believe me, if entrusted completely to the Pokemon players, and I say this as a level 40 Mystic, the portal network and the stop and all that would suck ass if only the Pokemon players were nominating things.
I still don't know how to submit a help ticket.
That's the truth. It is the fucking truth.
I still don't know how to submit a help ticket for the one I sent back in May that I can't. It's not going anywhere.
I'll look it up later and message it to you. So anyway. So speaking of like GPS games, I'm going to shout out this real quick just because the person that introduced me to this is in chat right now. So I have to kind of give her a little shit. But I downloaded another GPS based game called Orna is the name of this game. And it's a very simple kind of RPG-ish type of game. But it uses – by the way, Azette, I just hit level 71. We're somehow still – in a party together. But you'll notice it actually uses – oh, I better not show exactly where I live. But you can't see anything. It just was like 3 streets. But you can actually see –
yeah, it looks like 2D.
It looks like a little 8-bit kind of game, right? And then it actually shows like the map with all the little mobs on it. And then you can like fight them, and it's a little like
– I'm looking for this
little
now.
Battle. Orna. But the only thing is – the only like criticism I have of the game – is the fact that like the map seems to serve no real purpose. Like there's no point to go to a park or this place. It's just the map is just like the world around you. I mean, I guess there are like inns and things just put around or whatever, and you can party with people if you meet up in real life. And because I guess Azette and I only live probably 3 miles apart, somehow we're still in a party a day and a half later. She's basically carrying me through this game. So there is that. So I thought it was kind of cute. So I'm not sure the longevity of it. But wow, I guess we are somewhat influencers. Some of you guys in chat are asking about that. So how about that? Cool.
So I did want to mention, since we didn't make it on our show roll, but there was a story about Niantic actually partnering with Qualcomm to make AR glasses for Pokemon Go and other things. So that's kind of interesting that they're working on that.
It seems like a natural progression in the state of AR gaming is, you know, imagine if you could put on glasses and you will see Pikachu peeking out from behind the bush. And like what that trailer for the game looked like when it first came out, like you get one step closer to that, essentially. So it could be very interesting, you know.
Someday it'll be pretty interesting. Ten years.
I don't usually use the AR stuff because it eats fucking battery like no one's business.
My God, yeah.
But so that'll get better.
I played Minecraft Earth a little bit this week, but like,
How was that?
It is a battery sink. Like, I went from 80% to 5% in 20 minutes. And it wasn't accurate because, like, and the game was having trouble this weekend, too, because, like, I would use the camera to do the AR stuff, and it would get frozen. It would, like, the camera wouldn't move anymore. And it was really annoying. So I had to reboot my phone several times, reboot the game several times, and finally got to work. But then, like, it just, I kept hearing this ding, ding, ding timer thing. I'm like, what the hell is that? I'm like, am I being timed to do something here? And then I like, logged out of that because we had to go somewhere. I'm like, oh, shit, I have, like, 5% battery now. And so I charged in my, you know, my car for, like, 2 minutes and went up to 30%. So obviously that wasn't an exact figure. It was just an estimate based on the battery usage. But that thing eats battery, like, like, you would not believe it overheats the phone just so much. Like, it's so unoptimized. It's ridiculous. But Pokemon Go was like that at one time, too.
It was. And also just think about how fast the technology is going to progress. I mean, they're investigating it now because maybe in 5 to 10 years this is a reality. You know, we just talked about 25 years of PlayStation. And if you think about that, think about what the PlayStation 1 looked like. Think about how the PlayStation 1 ran on CDs. And that was, you know, the biggest – the DVDs weren't even – I mean, DVDs may have been a thing, but they weren't a common thing yet, you know, at the time the PlayStation 1 came out. So look at that versus now where we're at with PlayStation 4 on the cusp of PlayStation 5 and how now essentially your games aren't even going to necessarily have media. They come in magically through the air. I mean, on Wi-Fi, right? If your PlayStation 5 is wireless, there is the media
it's
is
magic.
An illusion. There is no media.
Well,
right?
You know the quote is that any technology suitably advanced enough can be indistinguishable from magic.
Right. So anyway, my point is that, you know, the technology may drain your battery like crazy now, but in 5-10 years, either the batteries are going to get bigger, the technology is going to get better. You know, a combination of all those things, and it's going to be a reality. So
processors will get better and it won't be a big drain and they'll have, you know, better APIs to run everything or tech architecture to run everything through.
Metal Mayhem in chat says DVDs were invented in 1997. So they weren't around because we're celebrating 25 years of PlayStation. PlayStation was out in 1994. So DVDs technically weren't around yet. But you are right with the second part of that. They become commonplace when PlayStation 2 was released. I still think personally PlayStation owes a lot of its success to the fact that that thing did play DVDs. And I think Blu-ray became the predominant format because the PlayStation 3 played Blu-rays. I think, you know, even though we talk about that, you know, is a game console as an entertainment center, is that so important? I mean, how many had a Nintendo Wii that was the Netflix device? And so not anymore, but, you know, but and so forth. I think gaming and entertainment kind of synergizing like that has been hugely important, which is why Xbox One tried this sports ball, cable, all this stuff that kind of misfired, you know, and we don't know what it's going to look like for PlayStation 5.
Yeah,
and the
they
next
just
Xbox
they
yet.
Marketed that really bad.
Yeah, I think the message was just kind of like lost. And if it had been like, it plays games, but it happens to do this too. And here's like, I think the picture-in-picture thing was neat, and that could have been as far as they needed to go with it, you know?
Yeah, but just anyway. Like me, I don't know. Like, now that I think about it, it's like, I don't hate it so much anymore. Like, just
in,
the messaging was just so
bad.
In some
ways, the original Xbox One was ahead of its time. I think the two mistakes, I didn't think mandatory Kinect.
That's dumb.
You're not going to convince me that that was something that was needed. And just in the messaging. Was lost.
And I don't think that was something that necessarily needed to be disclosed right there either, that it was like, I don't know. It's, but yeah. It,
anyhow.
Whatever.
All right. Anyhow. It's funny because this is spawning a little side conversation in chat. Questbuster saying, I remember when Netflix's stock price tanked hard when they announced they were phasing discs out before reversing that decision because they were going to spin it into a whole other company that was like Quickster or something
yes.
like that. And then they wanted to charge you over here and charge you over here. The funny thing is Netflix ended doing that anyway. They just did it a lot quieter and they did it a few years later. Log into your Netflix account on a computer and you're going to see a little link for DVD. And you can still do the Netflix DVD thing, but it's just – it's very quiet now, and they didn't spin it into a different – and I think everybody hated the name Quickster or whatever it was they were calling it. So, yeah. Anyway, and Bobby is – they still did it. It's just DVD.com. So, anyway. Yeah, sometimes the messaging is really what it's all about. All right, anyway, that's enough for our gaming weeks. Let's get into some gaming news. I was going to do housekeeping. I was going to announce the UPS during housekeeping, but I guess we got that. So I don't know what else to say. There's not going to be a show January 19th. I think I mentioned that last week, but we officially got the tickets for that show. We may actually – there's not going to be a show at the usual time on January 19th. But I think I was going to talk to you guys about maybe, because we haven't done it in a while, if it works for our schedules, we'll talk about it offline, but maybe doing a UK time zone show.
Yeah.
Because we haven't done one of those in a while.
That'd be fun.
So that might be fun.
My son would love to be on it. He keeps asking me, when are you guys going to do one that's earlier in the day?
Okay.
Well, depending on what day we do, we could also kidnap the Sparky the Lesser.
So maybe we'll figure something out. So maybe we'll do something it would be like 11 a.m. or noon our time, which would allow our folks in the U.K. to check the show out in a timely manner.
Oh, we can have both kids. They'd like to talk about all sorts of
So it would be
YouTubers.
A little different. Oh, thank you, Bobby, for reminding me. Sometimes I forget the shows are separate, so not everybody's going to hear this if I don't say it here. But there's going to be a co-stream later this week. So Bobby and I were just kind of like throwing ideas around. And long story short, we're going to do a stream Thursday night. We're going to do the Game Awards. We're going to do a little like, I guess, commentary or reaction stream to that. I like to think of it more as a community stream. Like, come watch the Game Awards with our community. We'll try to give our insight and our critique, but I want you not to think of that as we're just going to sit there and shit-talk the awards the whole time. It's not going to be that kind of stream. There's enough negativity in the gaming world. But if there's constructive critique, we're not going to hold back on any of that. But I think also reactions to whatever they happen to announce at the Game Awards will be very cool. And things along those lines. So Bobby and I, we did something like this for Square Enix when they did their press conference on a Monday night during E3. We did something very similar to this. And I think it was fun because we were able to just, you know, kind of critique because that was when they announced a lot of the Avengers stuff. And so we were kind of critiquing it, but not necessarily in a purely negative way.
I am kind of curious to see this year because other than like some of the announcements that like the Resident Evil 3 probably being a thing, I don't really know what they're going to announce. That's kind of – I like going into it not knowing anything.
There's a weird rumor going around about like leaked audio confirms that Master Chief is coming.
Oh, fuck that. There's always something.
I don't understand why Japan, where that game was made, is going to give a shit about Master Chief. Is Akuma still watching? Is Halo like recognized in Japan?
It wouldn't
I really don't think
Master
it
Chief. It would be like Steve from Minecraft.
I would bet Steve from Minecraft way before I would. Think
because Master like
Chief.
Minecraft
I'm still
is like
going
one
for Master Chef. I want Gordon Ramsay.
Okay, Akuma JP says yes. So maybe it could. I don't know. But
I doubt
wasn't
it.
Wasn't there also though another Spartan in Dead or Alive?
There was.
Yeah, there was.
In Dead or Alive 4, there was a female Spartan.
You're right.
And she's officially canon for Halo's universe, but not for Dead or Alive's universe.
I don't know if I see the Master Chief thing. It just doesn't – like
Minecraft.
Exactly, like Steve Minecraft, if it's going to be a Microsoft thing, makes 10 times more sense.
Because you could
Master
do Alex as an alt character, skin, stuff. You get the male-female stuff going there.
Absolutely.
Halo is their flagship franchise.
Sure.
So I would actually put that over any other of their franchises.
But I also think we also got Banjo-Kazooie already. So I just think, honestly, you know what I really, you know what I honestly
that
do think?
That also was Nintendo first and foremost and Rare.
I know, but you know what makes a lot more sense, in my opinion, honestly, is just fucking giving the people Waluigi. Just giving the people Waluigi just makes more sense than Master Chief. So I would place bets on that as a Smash reveal. But I do think them revealing a character is not a far-fetched notion at all. This has been done before, at like Nintendo has made big announcements before at the Game Awards. I think if you really want to, you know, kind of cross your fingers and your toes, I would hope for some Breath of the Wild 2 footage. More likely, though, is an Animal Crossing info dump, because we're only about 3 months, 4 months out from new Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the we'll probably have – set your expectations at the Animal Crossing level. Not that that's a bad thing, but, you know, that's the one that's coming out sooner. But, like, wish on a star for Breath of the Wild 2 footage. That seems to be a little more likely. Anyway, we will break this all down live, myself and Bobby, on Thursday, possibly as an officially recognized thing, because I know we applied for it, but we just haven't heard back. So, but we're they've said you can co-stream it no matter what. So we're going forward with that. So join our community here over at twitch.tv/VOGNetwork. That's VOG Network. I believe the Game Awards start at 5:30 Pacific, 8:30 Eastern. So we'll probably go live right before just to get settled in and all that good stuff. And we'll see you there. So follow along on Twitch and all that stuff for updates. All right, now let's get into some gaming news and some more things maybe we'll see more of at the Game Awards. I don't know. Loki, why don't you start us off?
So there was a leaked, or it's delisted now, a trailer that appeared on Square Enix's YouTube page showing off Kingdom Hearts 3 DLC Remind that's going to be coming on to the PlayStation 4 January 23rd, 2020, and then later it'll be released on Xbox One February 25th, 2020. Since then, of course, the trailer has, like I said, been delisted. It's private. You can't watch it anymore. But the...
Ooh, maybe because it was a Game Awards thing also.
But then you got the information, though, from that. So the official overview, which was posted with the trailer, says, Remind, the other tale that unfolded during this climax of Kingdom Hearts 3. Determined to rescue Kairi, Sora travels to the Keyblade Graveyard a short time before the final battle was to take place. Lacking a corporeal form, he traces the hearts of seven guardians of light. Through experiencing their personal battles firsthand, Sora is about to discover the truths that he has never before imagined. And apparently they had appearances by other Final Fantasy characters, Aerith, Leon, and Yuffie. So, interesting.
Interesting that it's still kind of relying on the older Final Fantasy characters than it is the newer ones. Like, I would have expected, you know, Prompto or something to show up. But, but then the 7 remake is on its way. So maybe it does make more sense. I don't know. So, pretty neat. I think people are looking for...
I still need to go back and play Kingdom Hearts 3, I purchased and just, like, forgot about.
I played a good chunk of it, but I need to go back and beat it. I really do.
Because I held back on playing Kingdom Hearts 3 because I've never really played through Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2, and then I tried watching, like, a summary of Kingdom Hearts, which, summary of Kingdom Hearts is, like, 3 or 4 hours long, and I'm like, I don't fucking know what's going on after watching all of that. Like, it makes no goddamn sense to me, so... I think I'll just have to play the game without actually understanding the depth of the story because it makes no fucking sense.
Yep. Figured that was... Yeah, I've tried to get the story summarized as well, and it's like... You just have to let it go. You just have to just take it as a visually stimulating, pretty game and go Disney characters and yelling at Donald because he can't heal. That you just have to take it for what.
Donald, heal, please.
All right. Anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about an actual update for Switch Online Classic.
Yes, we were just complaining about this last week.
And
they apparently are watching.
Who knew? Complaining to the manager works sometimes. No, in all seriousness, we did get...
Okay, Karen.
Okay, we did get... Well, you know, okay, tangent, ready? You know how they're saying... you know how okay boomer is a thing, right? You know, when Billy D. Williams says he's never heard of gender fluidity. Okay, boomer. You know, things like that, right? Now, apparently, some younger folks are calling Generation X the Karen generation. That's what I heard. We are the Karen generation.
But keep in mind that half of us has stayed true to our Gen X roots of apathy and disappointment, uh-huh. And the other half became Karen.
True. All right. Anyway. Moving on from that, you know what I remember from when I was your age, these were the games were all the rage. Actually, I am pretty hyped for these updates for a couple reasons. So they're updating both the SNES and the NES library, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. So the SNES library is getting 4 updates here in the U.S. Star Fox 2 which is a pretty big deal, because that was limited to that Super Nintendo Classic. But since that was a limited time thing, if you never were able to get your hands on one, now you'll be able to play Star Fox 2.
And so, see that it wasn't really that great anyway.
It wasn't really that good anyway. But you'll be able to play that. A game that I think was a little better, Super Punch-Out, is also going to be there. Kirby Superstar, which I actually didn't realize wasn't already there, but that was the Kirby Superstar is like the mini game collection, the 8 games in 1 that had like the Kirby.
I def perked up.
Wild Gunman and all that. Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Kirby Superstar. Fuck yes.
Yep. I had that game too. That game was fun. I liked the one that was basically Wild Gunman, but it was Kirby characters. It was cute. Very simple. And then Breath of Fire 2. So that's pretty cool too. A very big RPG making its way to the Super Nintendo library. So that alone is a pretty cool update. But then, then on the NES side, so a game that was brought up on the show not that long ago, Journey to Silius, is coming out on the NES side of things. So that's kind of fun, right? So you can hear the music now in that game. So you can check that out on the NES. But here is the Wii Snatcher to snatch all wigs in the universe, and this is huge on the NES. Crystalis is coming out to the library.
Oh girl.
Fuck. Yes, that game is so good. And now you don't have to buy that SNK collection, just so you can play Crystalis on the Switch. So that is great. That is a Christmas gift. That is amazing. That's so cool. Now, usually I like to look at, well, okay, if this is what's going on in the U.S., then what's going on in Japan? And Japanese releases, they don't look as strong in Japan, I gotta say. The Japanese releases are a little different. My original link didn't work here. Let's see. In Japan, they're only getting 4 games. Famicom is getting Famicom Wars. So that's kind of cool. And that's where, like, that's the Wars series where Advance Wars, I think, is the game most of you know. So if you want to go back and play the original one on the NES, Famicom Wars is probably like the coolest little, like, different thing that's coming out. But they're not getting Crystalis and they're not getting Journey to Silius. They're getting a Sunsoft game called Route 16 that wasn't very good. Sorry. That game is going to be coming out on the NES. And then on the Super Nintendo side, they're only getting Star Fox 2 and the Kirby Deluxe, their version of that game. Hoshi no Kirby Super Deluxe is their version. They're getting that. They are not getting Super Punch Out and they're not getting Breath of Fire 2. So this
Did they already have those maybe?
No. So this is the first time in a long time I can think where Japan did not get as strong. Well, unless you're a Wars fan. If, like, you're all about Advance Wars, then maybe it is a stronger list for you. But for me, it's really not. But the nice thing is that, again, and this holds true in Japan as well, the Switch is region free. So you can always create an account in the other region for free and download the other region's player, because that's what I did for Japan. And then once you download it, you can log in with your local account, for me, my American account, and I can play the Famicom and all that stuff just fine. So if I really do want to play Famicom Wars, it is possible. And the same would be true for those of you in Japan. If you really, really wanted to play Super Punch-Out or Crystalis, which Crystalis must not been a thing in Japan, I guess. That's kind of surprising. I would have thought that game, I don't know. But there might also be weird rights things because of the SNK release. I don't know. There might be some weird rights issues there. I don't know. I don't know what the holdup is. But that is what's coming out on the Switch Online. So very jazzed for those updates. Wish we were getting them a little more regularly. But at the same time, I'll also take what I can get. All right, moving on. Dark Sakura. So sometimes in these slower news weeks, as far as like game releases, we get interesting like gaming studies and gaming effects, right?
That's one of my big interests is, of course, looking at the impact of video gaming on the world and not just the games themselves. And there was a really good write-up in Psychology Today that, believe it or not, I read Psychology Today fairly regularly. This was actually one of the blog posts from December 6th. It was written by, let me get the fellow's name again, Guy Winch. And it's talking there about how video games can actually boost your emotional health and reduce your sense of loneliness. And this is, phrased in, the bad side of gaming culture being sexist, racist, homophobia, video game addiction, stuff like that. And while there are some detrimental parts of video gaming culture as a whole, most of the time, when people are reporting on this, they're only reporting on the bad because that's what what sells. It's what gets attention. They're not talking about the positive sides of things. So there's an example of actually an EA game that called Sea of Solitude. It came out in 2013. But it was created by Cornelia Gephardt after a breakup. And the main character, Kay, has to fight with humans who have become monsters because they became too lonely. And she uses that to fight her own loneliness. And it brings out those feelings of emotion in somebody and can actually be a little cathartic for them. Multiplayer platforms are also really good for people who are, say, homebound. You know, people with chronic illnesses, people with a disability, some people who maybe have social anxiety issues or, you know, any other thing like that. It helps them connect with a greater community that they wouldn't have access to in person because of those limitations. Also, a lot of these, especially ones that require group effort, teach teamwork, teach what's the other thing? Delegation, even negotiation. So a lot of these things with some of these other levels of social interaction, even with a 2014 psychology review, actually said that video games can help gamers, and this is a quote, flourish psychologically by generating positive emotions, boosting individual functioning, and enhancing social connections, all of which contribute to mental health and well-being, end quote.
Sorry, I just want to add to what you're saying, the whole, like, you know, when you're talking about, you know, the coordinating with others and things like that, I think about, like, taking out, like, big raid bosses in a game like World of Warcraft or something, especially if you're in one of those groups that tries to be on the cutting edge of things. Like, if you're trying to take out big raid bosses, bitch, that's project planning at that point, because you're planning out, okay, who's going to make the craftables? Who's going to make drop the potion table? Who's going to drop the food table? Who's going to be working on gearing up? Okay, we need a breakout group to go gear up over here, and then we're gonna, like, that is your
and
fucking
who's
gonna project
be the
planning.
Snarky bitch that calls everybody out.
Yeah, or who is leading on Discord? Who is marking things? That all plays into it. Sorry, well, it's fascinating because it
develops,
is those type of skills.
And I'll keep in mind, I never did anything on Discord. I always typed everything out. But it does also improve your communication skills overall, because you learn tact. And you learn your audience. So especially if you're, say, not a person with great typing communication skills, but say you don't have Discord, this will also teach you how to think quickly, type it quickly. Honestly, I learned how to type through just trying to keep up with my roommates on AOL. So, but it also will teach you ways of phrasing, positioning, how to show respect to other people. Because you know the people who are being just complete chuds in, you know, chat. They're not the ones who really end up getting paid much attention to. It's the people who are carefully phrasing things, explaining things, the helpful people. Or as Mr. Rogers said, always look for the helpers. But you learn that kind of communication, that your positioning skills are what's going to get you more attention, more prominence in your various groups.
This comment from Questbuster in chat is so good. Reminds me of a story I read from an old magazine from the 80s, digitally archived, that talked about how a psychologist used wizardry, that's a game, to help troubled youth, not the actual act of wizardry, just to be clear.
Thanks for that clarification.
Yes, just to be clear, the game wizardry. A psychologist used wizardry to help troubled youth to break out of their shell when they started talking about their characters. As they became more invested in their character's growth, they started becoming more social. And, you know, I think back to my own childhood, and, you know, obviously I was picked on a lot for being effeminate, and I wasn't super into, like, sports. Like, I played soccer for a long time, but, like, you don't really play soccer on recess grounds. I didn't really want to, like, play those same types of games and things like that.
For the record, I would now say that the word effeminate may not be appropriate. I would say that you had a different masculinity.
Okay, that came from a perspective of me being 12 years old, to be clear. Okay. However, all that being said, I would say that I was picked on a lot for the sports things and all the other stuff, but when I was the cool kid, when people, so it's like the bully would beat me up or whatever. Not I didn't get, like, actually physically beat up a lot, but, you know, verbally assault me or whatever. And then when nobody else around, it was, hey, where's level 7 on the second quest in Zelda? And, you know, at that age, I wasn't, like, confident enough to say, you know, fuck you, you fucking fuck. Find it yourself, you dumb fuck. Like, I wasn't really, like, able to really say that. So I would tell him, you know, because, like, oh, I have a chance to, like, fit in suddenly and be a part of this. And, like, video games were kind of that for me. So I'm sorry, but like Questbusters' comment about, like, the 80s and wizardry and helping kids come out of their shell, in a way, like, games, because that's what I was into when I was younger, that ended up being the thing that I – could connect with other kids on, when some of the things that were more, you know, mainstream, like sports and stuff, I didn't connect with.
Well, and the other thing too, you remember those stories that were coming out when Pokemon Go came out about people with severe social anxiety leaving their homes to play Pokemon Go and finding that that was their common ground for other people that they would see outside playing it and expanding their friend groups. You know, I've made friends, you know, that, like, even though I'm not really playing Ingress anymore, I met, you know, some of the local people in my area playing Ingress. Just, I'd see them looking at their phone, or I'd have someone say, hey, if you stand a little bit away from that portal, you'll cast a better thing. That's how I learned what I knew for a lot of Ingress tactics, was meeting, Orville in my area. Really just fantastic person, really
sadly
nice.
Sadly doesn't play anymore.
Yeah, well, neither do I, but...
But, yeah, I know, but, yeah. You know, but, well, because a lot of that has moved to Pokemon Go, and now our chat is lighting up a little bit on Pokemon Go. ActDev says, I made so many new friends by playing Pokemon Go. Absolutely. Or, like, Ingress, like, the Mr. Smoosh's cat sitters, because even though Dark Sakura is always kind and she'll do it when she can...
Is it who I think it is?
It's a drive for her, right? Do you know... I don't know if you... Do you know Scarina... I'll tell you offline.
It's not Dana.
No, it's not Dana. Okay. No. Although Dana's great. We've been to the movies. Yeah. The two that live really close by have been cat sitting Mr. Smoosh because, you know, for you, well, it takes 30 minutes to get out here.
I would gladly do it, but is a schlep.
Yeah. For them, they're 5 minutes, you know, and we're going on that cruise in March. Right. And so it's going to be a lot to ask of you. But for these guys, you know,
I'm trying to convince Dan we need a Disney trip. So I might need help with.
Oh, sure, we can.
But
we can
actually, no,
out.
Because Ryan lives in my neighborhood now, so I could have Ryan do it. But
yeah.
But yeah, the Midna-ator. I can't say Shermanator was so easy with Shermie, and I can't do that with Midna.
Yeah.
The brat. But anyway, I mean, it's like, well, even back when I was playing D&D, when I started getting into playing, my boyfriend at the time, Ben, who we called him Ben the Head, he was awesome because he had a big noggin, he got me into playing Rifts. And that expanded my friend group just with tabletop gaming, finding people, oh, yeah, you want to do this experimental thing that just came out? Yeah, go for it. Here's your graphing calculator. Good luck. Because Rifts is crazy. And then from there, I got into other D&D groups. And, like, my roommate in college, I became good friends with her. Well, you know Gwen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because of our gaming group, we had the same circle of friends. The friends group expanded. I'm still friends with them. I've seen their children grow up.
Yeah. I know. We've kind of really taken this story and run with it. But at the same time, you know, as far as gaming's and improving moods and social interactions and so forth. Hello, look at this.
This gives me the same feeling that my old D&D group gave me in Alabama. Because, you know, I would go through, and I was busy with classes. I would take 18 units. I was that person. When I broke my ankle, I was hanging in the group playing Magic. My Magic group, you know, I made a lot of friends that way. But going to my D&D group, whereas I'd tell Grandma, I'm going to sacrifice chickens now. Because she thought it was, yeah. Like, I'm going to my weekly chicken sacrifice. Okay. But at any rate, coming here is the same thing. I have that same kind of camaraderie and that same feeling of a regular place where I know I'm going to and I will be accepted for myself, you know. Or, sorry, I'm a mouthy bitch, deal with it. And guess what? You both deal with it beautifully.
It's funny, and maybe Azette can attest to this too, because I know Azette from Ingress and that whole community. We were just having a conversation, we as in a group, we're just having a conversation the other day about, like, you know, Ingress is kind of seems like its star is fading a little bit, you know, as they haven't done a lot to really push the game forward as we thought was going to happen with Prime. And the topic came up that was like, you know, if this game were to go under tomorrow, I'd still go out to Mongolian barbecue with you guys once in a while, You know, like it was that kind of thing. It was like,
I would like to meet these people.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
And go to Mongolian barbecue.
Yeah, you can come to, we will have a Mongolian barbecue night just for you, but you'll have to boot your game and deploy your aid on the portal.
Okay. I need more bursters. Dude, I will go to some of these portals and just power up my crap.
Okay. Well,
I'll do it for you.
Don't do it tonight because they know I'm busy on Sundays.
I can
like
still
to tear
spin
it through
them
here.
Or whatever. I'm thinking Pokemon, but I can still tap them for stuff.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
I'll tap that portal.
But that's my. But my point is that like the game brought us together, but the game doesn't have to keep us together.
Or like, how often do we go out and play Para Para?
Perfect. We all stopped playing DDR regularly many years ago, and that's not an anti-DDR anti thing. It's a they didn't make DDR for a long time. It was harder to find.
That's why we went.
We
to...
all got older and have more medical conditions. Like it's just. Well,
that's why we expanded our repertoire away from music games and went into the general.
Yes, yes, yes.
Into our beautiful little niche on the internet.
Very much that. Very much that.
Where we are the world's best internet gaming podcast, subjectively.
All right, and humble. Don't forget and humble.
Fuck the whole humble thing. I'll brag all fucking day. We've been doing this shit for a while. No. I am beyond hashtag blessed. Fuck that shit. We made this shit
you guys didn't
happen.
See her do the...
Look, hold on. Let me put the mic down.
Hashtag blessed. Okay, finish your thought.
But we made this shit happen. You know, and I was actually even that podcast that I love, Stuff Mom Never Told You, they did a whole thing about the hashtag blessed and the humble brag and everything. Mm-hmm. Fuck humble bragging. I am going to ego brag. We come do this shit every weekend. We made this shit happen. We got the equipment. Well, you mostly got the equipment. But, you know, I use my discount. You know, we made all of this happen. The three of us did this. And I think we have every right to be fucking proud of ourselves. I'm going to put that out there right now. This is a tangent that I will build my mountain on and die on it. We made this shit happen. Fuck humble bragging.
I'm with that, but I think you also have to have a sense of humility, I think, about...
Well, we had help.
Sure.
But...
Sure, this stays here because of the kindness of people like Jason, of people like Bobby... You know, they're, you're right. There's help in getting here, and just the fact that, like, you know, we're not the most downloaded. Most people don't know who the fuck we are, but that's okay.
But I can say
you guys do.
We can be gracious.
Yeah.
But I think that we need to put aside a little bit of humility and realize the hard work that we put into making this happen.
You can have a little bit of both.
You can have a little bit of both, but it's just the whole thing. Like, they do the humble brag thing to make it look like, oh, I'm not that important, but look at this. No, there's no putting any
of
that
the humble
down.
Brag's a little bit of a yeah.
I am all about bragging for the things that we worked our collective took us on to make happen. Mm-hmm. And we can go even further. Mm-hmm. But I do have a lot of gracious. I'm not just saying, oh no, fuck all of y'all who helped us. I'm not saying that at all.
Right.
Thank you to everyone who helped us.
Yes.
At the same time, we can't discount the effort that we put into it.
Sure.
So I didn't mean to tangent in that respect.
No, you're
but
fine.
I feel very
you're getting,
deeply
you're getting
about
some
that.
She-Hulk says it's not bragging if you did it. And Nifty 805 says, yes, Sakura, slay mama.
Right.
Pod Culture says, but do any of you have a Parsec Award? No, but the podcast Parsec Awards were mostly for like fiction and that type of stuff anyway, which the only category we would qualify for is a very niche thing. But my point is, we may not have that award, but we were the very first gaming award for the podcast awards.
That is correct.
Back when people kind of cared about those.
And
so
and you know who I got my because I went to pick it up. Yeah. I was and I got
That's
it from
right.
Adam Curry.
Yep.
With his short hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I was kind of disappointed because I was like, I remember you on MTV and you had gorgeous hair.
I always forget that you actually went to that. You went to that awards thing in person and picked that award up.
Was not in San Diego, but I stayed in La Jolla with my friend.
Yeah.
And I take that back. I stayed in Coronado with my sister.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went out to do that, hung out because Julie and Krista were there hanging out in La Jolla.
It's funny. DJ Rama says, where is that award?
On at my house.
And Jamie's shelf.
It's in my house.
To be fair, we did the show at her house for a long time, and it was one of those things we never thought to bring over. But yeah, that's funny. Where is that award? Well, she went to go pick it up, and then she kept it.
Well, I did drive all the way to San Diego. You did.
I remember the night.
In
the
PT
three of us.
Cruiser. Ugh.
I remember the night the three of us went to San Bruno or wherever it was out by the airport for the Live 365 Awards, because that was the year we were nominated for Station of the Year.
And I won something.
I
got the clip speakers.
Yeah, you won like a lottery. You didn't win like
– Well, yeah, but it was
– We got shut out.
I also won like a remote for like – it was a
– Yeah, you won, yeah. We all won door prizes, but –
but the speakers were on the computer
did the station
for a decade.
Did the station win any awards? I don't think we did.
No, we didn't, because remember they forgot to even not like read our nomination.
Oh,
like,
yeah, because you were in the back going, hey. But yeah, no, we were that movie that got nominated for like four Oscars that didn't go home with any. But it was but still that night we kind of like we were going in there and the three of us were together and taking our pictures and we kind
of
felt like rock stars.
It was not a Parsec Award. It was like a podcasting award.
Yeah,
it was like the podcast awards.
It was simply podcast awards.
Yeah.
They're still around. They're just very different.
I'll take
now.
A picture of it when I – no, I know where it is. It's on the shelf by my computer.
Yeah.
Because I look at
I've seen it when I've gone to your house. That's how I knew it was there.
Yeah, I look at that thing with pride and honor and memories mm-hmm. of Adam Curry's lack of hair. He's still pretty, though. Well, back then he was still pretty.
All right, let's move on. Whew, we did a lot of tangents. That was good. Sadly, we have to go from some good, great topics to a not so great. I mean, it depends how you look at it. I guess it is good news, but
well, it's not great that there had to have been a lawsuit.
Exactly.
But it's good that the outcome is at least positive in the towards the female employees that were part of the lawsuit. So Riot Games will now have to pay out at least $10 million. Combined to each of the female employers or employees that they've had for the last 5 years. So that's supposed to be split about 1,000 ways. And apparently this is for, any workers who had worked at Riot Games between the period of November 2014 and the final settlement day. It says they'll receive each of an allocation of the fund decreed by their duration and contract status as a Riot employee. And apparently it represents the degree of justice for women in Riot Games, many of whom previously staged protests against them. So it's nice to see they're getting paid out. Unfortunately, that they had to get that far to the point where that they lost the lawsuit to that.
Yeah, no, I mean, and then that whole subject has been really like, when it comes to Riot. But and hopefully this can help us move on. I say us is like the industry and everything. I can't say us isn't, because I'm not a woman. But I can hope that this will maybe be something that's like, okay, now we can move on and Riot as a company can be stronger. And maybe the gaming industry can kind of learn from this and make an environment that's more welcoming to everybody. So.
I would hope so. They'd be able to put that gender discrimination behind them, but
yeah,
we'll see. I mean, it's a matter of like, after this is done, do things change? Or is it just like, oh, it's the price of doing business? Type of thing. Yeah. I don't know.
Gaming is for everyone. Put it on the wall. Put it in your boardrooms at these gaming companies across America. Remember, that should be one of the like primary rules of developing games. Gaming is for everyone. Don't forget it. Like, there's no reason to. Make people feel excluded. Why? That's a horrible thing. Nobody likes it when that's done to them. So I just, it's silly. So anyway, I hope this goes a ways in letting the industry as a whole kind of move on and remember better and act better and do better next time.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, anyway, let's move on and talk a little bit about some changes that have happened with Super Mario Maker 2, which I did peek at this week a little
bit.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
Yeah, they did a big update to the game, which is nice because I feel like Mario Maker 2 kind of like came and went, and they haven't been doing a lot to maintain it, or it didn't seem like they were, and then this came out of nowhere. And I think part of the reason it didn't seem like they were doing a lot was because like that whole the amiibo blocks and the limited time little sprites you could get for 8-bit Mario mode and all that stuff that was in the original Mario Maker.
It's kind of gone.
Yeah, it kind of went away. But now we're seeing maybe a version 2.0 of that, literally, because version 2.0 of Super Mario Maker 2 came out this week on December 5th. And one of the biggest new things in this is that now there is a Master Sword item within Super Mario Maker.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah. And the Master Sword turns you into Link. And it gives you new moves. So now you have a sword, you can shoot arrows and drop bombs, and you can do kind of like the little sword hop thing. Kind of is like Zelda 2 in
the downward thrust. Yeah.
Yeah, the downward thrust and all that stuff. So it's kind of neat. So obviously these new mechanics will now lend themselves to all these new ideas when it comes to the creator mode. The only downside is I haven't really found a way to like find these levels specifically. Like you either have to find codes on Twitter or you kind of look through the popular stuff.
Yeah, I don't.
A little harder to find that. I didn't find an official level.
They would be nice if they had a way to, you know,
maybe I missed
meta tag these things so that you'd have ways to search stuff.
Yeah.
But that would be too close to the internet. Nintendo doesn't go close to the internet because that's like the sun. They don't fly too close to the sun.
Dr. Tsuya in chat says, I do like the idea of this better because the Mega Man 1 stuff was just a reskin. I'm sorry, Mario Maker 1. I don't know why when I see MM1 I go, Mega Man. Mario Maker 1 stuff was just a reskin, but this is legitimately like having Link in Super Mario Brothers. Bobby says, I found a great level that helps you learn the Link stuff. Yeah, but usually like in Mario Maker 1, these limited time, you know, skins would come with a demo level, which is usually how you earn the skin. And that isn't here,
yeah.
Which is a little weird, but I mean, again, I'd rather have it than not have it, so... what they did add, which was interesting, was speed running or a level. So there was like an official level that will help you with speed running. And they call it the ninji because the little ninja star thing.
Ninja characters.
Yeah. The little,
well, they're so, called ninji.
Yeah. So the ninji levels, you – and what's cool is that after you beat it and why they call it ninji is that then all the ghost ninjis that represent other speedrunners show up the second time. So you can see the bar a little better at what there is to beat. And there is an official it's a snowball level right for the holidays. So it's not a Christmas level, but it's like a winter wonderland type of thing. So it has, you know, the little guys. What do you call those guys that throw up the spike balls and then launch them at you? They were in like Mario 3 and some.
Oh,
of them.
I don't remember.
You know what I'm talking about?
They,
those guys that would like, yeah. They'd look up and they'd throw up the spike ball and then throw
but
it
yeah,
at you.
Yeah, they're new to the
yeah,
this patch.
They're now in Mario Maker, but in this ninja level, they do snowballs.
Yes.
So that's cute, right? Because you can pick up the snowballs and throw them back at them. Some of the other things that are new in this. It's Spike. The name of the character is actually Spike, not to be confused with Game Boy Spike. Happy belated birthday, by the way. But Spike is the actual name of the character of Mario. Also added is dash blocks, but that's only in Mario 3D World. Frozen coins, which is when they're encased in the ice. Mm-hmm. We've seen that before. P blocks. Cool. That's going to be a big one. And then Pokey, the stacked cactus. Thing
yes.
Is now available as well.
Which you can make fly, and it's kind of crazy.
Which is also a snowman in that limited time level. So kind of neat that they're adding that type of stuff. So really cool to see this Mario Maker 2 update just when I was like, oh, I guess that kind of came and went. No, they're kind of supporting it with some more updates. That's really cool to see. Happy to see it. So yeah, the meta tags. I like that idea for maybe with the Zelda stuff. So
that's how they did it with Little Big Planet. I mean, it's not a bad idea, and it helps you find levels better instead of having to have this stupid code exchange crap. Mm-hmm. Seriously, Nintendo, get away from the damn code exchanges. I mean, that's – I don't know. It's just like, yeah, we don't want to program our friend, and you guys just do it, okay? You do it. It's such a lazy approach to it.
All right. Well, let's move on, shall we, and talk about Dark Sakura. You have a – kind of
an irritating one.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a world politics type of thing, but it also shows that gaming can be
disgusting.
A propaganda device, right?
Well, oftentimes in some places, gaming is a propaganda, especially in China. And this game is translated to "Everyone hit the traitors," where players can assault the pro-democracy protesters in Hong Kong with weapons like bats and shoes just by tapping on them. And again, this is absolutely propaganda. The game opens, and it's a free game, by the way, but it opens up saying Hong Kong is a part of China, and this can't be meddled with by outside powers. And so basically, it's just, it's very anti-Western. It's very, anti-capitalist, even though capitalism is freaking everywhere. But it specifically, though, is meant to hurt the efforts of the protesters in Hong Kong. And I think it's absolutely disgusting.
It was submitted to Steam for approval.
Huh.
But they are apparently not to be... are still waiting for release because of, quote, controversial and potentially illegal content. And then also DC Comics, related to this, pulled a Batman poster after Chinese supporters said it supported anti-government protests. So just this whole thing that they're doing is absolutely disgusting, and too many people are bowing to it when... I don't know.
Well, this straight-up propaganda game coming to Steam is, or trying to come to Steam is very fascinating. And, it just goes to show.
Disturbing to me.
It goes to show, and, you know, something to consider is that, you know, if video games are art, art typically has a message. And sometimes that message can be a good thing. That can be a great thing. That message can tell a story. That message can make you feel things. That message can be something like Gone Home. That message can be something like That Dragon Cancer. That message can be, you know, really powerful. But sometimes that message can be used for not so great things, like straight up political propaganda, which is what this is. So I think it's an interesting sign of our times, and that video games is very much a part of that. I mean, in the 1920s, this would have been a poster that used some type of pop culture thing with a very political message.
Or now, a little ad in a
yeah
in Harper's.
Now in the new 20s, how are we going to distinguish? I guess the 1920s versus the 2020s. Now in the new 20s, it's video games.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Mm-hmm. Azette in chat says these companies hitched their horse to China and now they're kowtowing to them because they hold the chips. Yeah, that's a lot of where the frustrations with Blizzard came from a couple months ago, talking about that. So, tricky subject, but I think an important one because, you know, I think you need to be aware. And, this one is a very obvious piece of propaganda. What about those things that are less obvious? So, something to think about. Anyway, moving on. Let's talk about the things that will obviously be concluding soon.
Which is good, because this was my least favorite part of the Bethesda E3 press events, was the discussion of Elder Scrolls Legends. It was their card game that they had worked on, and now they've announced that they have ceased working on any big updates or future expansions. We've decided to put any new content development or releases on hold for the foreseeable future. We've heard that song and dance before. New expansions and other future content, however, are no longer under active development, they had said as well. And... yeah, so it looks like that they're just kind of let it die a slow death, apparently.
Just going to leave it in the land of the unsupported. Mm-hmm. So, well, bummer for people that were into that game, I guess. So, but maybe it could also be one of those things where now this is more resources that go towards Elder Scrolls 6 or something else on Bethesda's end of things. So, all right.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on. Another game. That is a card game of sorts. Let's talk about Gwent. So Gwent is part of the Witcher franchise. Gwent was a side game you could play in The Witcher 3, which I played not that long ago, and I actually played my first game of Gwent. I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but I played it, and I won somehow, because it was easy. But Gwent ended up being a whole side game that ended up coming out. So Gwent came out on PC, and it came out on iOS. It also came out on various consoles like PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. However, they made a decision this week. The folks behind CD Projekt Red, behind Gwent and The Witcher and all that, said this week, "We have made a tough decision to discontinue support of console versions of the game. So you can no longer spend money for cards on PlayStation 4 or Xbox One. And on December 9th, the console versions of the game will no longer support matchmaking." Ouch, if you bought cards in the past, I suppose. But it seems like folks are kind of playing this more on PC and iOS anyway, so this may be more of a sign of it's too thin across all these platforms, so we're going to sunset these consoles where it's not used as well. So also it should be pointed out, between December 9th and June 9th, you can copy your progress from the console version of the game to a new GOG account. So you're not completely screwed, and that's kind of the way that they're trying to ease this a little bit, is that, hey, we're not just like deleting your cards. We're going to ease you over to the PC version of the game where there's more people. So you connect your console to GOG, and then because that's CD Projekt Red's thing, and then everything with like cards, deck list, account level, all that stuff will go over to the GOG system.
Well, that's good, at least.
Except weird things, meteorite powder. If you're PlayStation 4, you lose it. It's so weird, but whatever. Saying it's not possible. It's very strange. But what's also weird to me, why couldn't this have just been cross-platform in the first place? I understand this came out in an era when it wasn't possible on Sony because they were kind
of
a holdout.
Maybe it's just the way they developed it. Who knows?
But why wouldn't that have been the solution, to just tie them into the same matchmaking system? It's kind of weird that they didn't do that as a response, and we get this instead. But whatever, I guess. So, all right. And Questbuster says, "Yeah, Gwent, they killed the console version. Yep, some hard times, but that was cool of them to do. That they did copy things over, so that way you're not totally screwed if you are willing to switch to GOG." All right. Let's go back to a simpler time, shall we? We're going to go back to a time actually not as long ago as some prior selections, because the rule here for the Classic Game of the Week, where once a week Dar Sakura steps into the gaming vault and finds a game that she thinks, hey, you kids should check out this game, or hey, this game has historical significance, or I think maybe the case of tonight's pick, hey, can you believe this game qualifies now because it's 10 years old? So, Dark Sakura, what did you pick for the Classic Game of the Week?
All right. And I dropped hints on the Twitters because of tweeting, but I picked Angry Birds. Angry Birds is a 10-year-old game as of the 11th. And
now you get to hear the noises in the background of the birds going, "Rrr."
It is also the first, I think, iOS game, first released as a mobile game, that I have done for Classic Games. So we're getting into the territory of mobile gaming as a viable.
And to be fair, the video we're seeing is not from a mobile version. I believe it's one of the console versions. I think
they
ported this to everything. I actually switched yours out, Dark Sakura, because I don't know if you knew, but the one you picked was all in Russian text.
Yeah, so, that. Well, I don't see why that mattered. The game's the same.
I picked one in the localized, so. But whatever. Okay. Well, it's the same thing.
Mm. Well, at any rate, Angry Birds did come out in December 2009, and it was first released on iOS, and I'm going to mispronounce this, is it Maemo? M-A-E-M-O? Devices. Since then, 12 million copies of the games have been acquired from the iOS App Store, and so because of that popularity, later versions did get released. For Android, Symbian, Windows Phone, and BlackBerry 10 devices. And, of course, the spawned home versions and a sequel that came out in 2015 for iOS and Android. So the game is really simple, and it can be really addictive. I mean, and for the record, it was developed by Rovio Entertainment. But anyway, you slingshot birds, and some different birds have different abilities, as we can see. And your goal is to destroy some pigs. Very, very militant-looking hogs. And they will be on stands or in special rooms or different things. And your goal is to efficiently use your birds as ammunition to destroy these pigs and the platforms that they're on. And you can make the platforms topple on the pigs and whatnot.
Can I just say, in many ways, this game's engine the design reminds me of the old Tank Wars type of games, which then, you know, things like Worms, because essentially, what are you doing with the birds? You're picking your angle and you're picking your power. That was the main mechanic behind
it. Oh my God,
have we
done Scorched Earth as a Classic Game of the Week?
You'll have to take it up with the Office of Classic Gaming. But anyway, let's let her finish this week.
We'll talk. I'll let you do a classic game.
Yeah, next time she's gone, we'll do that one.
All right.
You can do one while I'm here. It's cool. But remember, pinball next month or next year. Well, both.
Not every week, but yeah.
Yeah. But at any rate, since it became so popular, I mean, the entire franchise has had over 2 billion downloads across all platforms as of January 2014. That's including special editions. And it was actually officially labeled, after its release, one of the most mainstream games out in 2010.
and a runaway hit for 2010. And the largest mobile app success the world has ever seen as of 2011. Those are all quotes. But at any rate, it really is just slingshot, kill pigs, eat bacon and chicken, maybe? Ooh, what if they had called this game Bacon Wrapped Chicken? That would have been pretty badass. But
maybe I would have played it more.
But you've got different kinds of birds, as distinguished by their shape and their color. You get the basic red bird, just called Red. And then you have birds that are effective against different materials or have different abilities. So yellow bird, named Chuck, will speed up as it goes. A blue bird will fragment into three birds, and they're just called the Blues. A black bird called Bomb explodes. The white bird called Matilda can drop egg projectiles. There's a pink one called Stella that can trap objects in bubbles. A green bird named Hal that boomerangs back. And a giant red bird named Terrence, who looks like the original red bird but is bigger, who does more damage to structures than the smaller ones. And an orange bird called Bubbles that expands and inflates. And then you've got the different pigs. You have small pigs who are weaker. You have large pigs that are able to withstand more damage. And then you have pigs that wear armor, like the military hats I was talking about, that are more impervious. And of course you've got, you know, all the levels are predetermined, they're all set up a certain way, and you basically, your goal is to eliminate all of the pigs before the last bird is launched, and then after that you complete the level, and the next level is unlocked. But if you run out of birds first and the pigs aren't defeated, the level is considered incomplete and must be repeated, and then you get your points based on the damage or destruction, and bonus points for having unused birds. Your survivors give you points. Don't murder all the birds. And then you can go back and repeat levels that weren't done all up to 3 stars. You can get star ranking on each level to do better and improve your score. And so the game, like I said, it was originally released on iOS and had just a single episode called Poached Eggs, and it had 3 themed chapters with 21 levels each, and then you got free upgrades as it went along. And I just remember how the logo has changed over the years. That first logo was just really dark and sketchy, and it got a little bit different. But the first update came out on February 11th, 2010 as an episode called Mighty Hoax. They had 2 more chapters added. And after that, we got Golden Eggs and Danger Above and blah, 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 blah. But we're talking about the original. But then after that, you did get different themes. Like the first themed one was Ham'em High, as in Hang'em High. But it was an Old West themed. And then you got new birds after that, like the Mighty Eagle. But, I mean, the game really did launch, you know, just a bajillion, you know, just a franchise that has spawned so many other things, because you can find Angry Birds shirts, and I still see them on sale.
Feature-length movies.
Yeah, the movies.
Yeah, there's
2 of them.
Yep. But, actually, so yeah, the other releases that came out were the Nokia N900 multimedia internet phone, iPhone, like I said, iPod Touch. Rovio then did an exclusive iPad version called Angry Birds HD that came out in 2010. It then after that came out for the Palm Pre. It came out for Palm's Web OS. Symbian 3 phones got a copy that included Poached Eggs and Mighty Hoax. And then it later on started working on Kindle Fire and Kindle Fire HD. And then, of course, it came on for multiples. Like, even our console versions, we got Angry Birds for PSP, for PlayStation Portable. It was sort of like a mini-game type. And it brought out Windows versions, and then we got them for Mac on the App Store. And then for Nintendo DS, there was... I'm sorry, for Wii, I'm talking about, came Angry Birds Trilogy, and then there was the Nintendo DS version. And an enhanced version was proposed for the LG Optimus 3D, but I don't know if that one actually got released. There are browser versions of this that run in WebGL or Canvas. You can get them through the Chrome Web Store. you have all other kinds of, I mean, there's just so many that came out, but like I said, you know, you get it on many other things too. You've got, you know, like we're saying, movies, we have clothing, we have, you know, school supplies,
Lego sets.
Which would be a
It's
mess.
A brand. It's a character. It's you know, it's everywhere.
Well, that's right. And you know, and now you even when you're talking about physics based games like this, people will say what, like Angry Birds? You know. So but I really consider this one to be notable for what it is.
Well, I think what's also interesting, no, and you know, I know I was giving you a little shit when you picked this game on Twitter, and you know, because I do think, and I think this is worth talking about as well, there was something about this game and the popularity of this game because it was so, like it kind of defined cell phone gaming for a little while in an era probably pre-Pokemon Go. You know, this game kind of defined what a cell phone game was. And I think for a lot of people, it was like, oh, it's a casual game. And like, oh,
yeah, it was like
you're
one
a
of
gamer
the, one of the first games that my kids would play on tablets. Like they would, you know, you'd see a tablet and it's like, oh, you got to put Angry Birds on there because that's what all the kids are playing is Angry Birds or Fruit Ninja.
Well, and I love physics-based games, so this one really just appealed to me. I thought, and people will call this stuff like casual games, but there is strategy involved in it. You have to have an understanding of physics. You have to understand the game physics. I never saw this as really being super casual. Maybe casual in the fact that you could play a few levels and put it away, but I could fucking do that on my Sega Saturn with Bust a Move. I could save my game.
And I think for this, you know, and certainly anything negative I've ever said about Angry Birds is not from a place of accessibility or getting games in the hands of more people. I'm all for more people playing games. But I think always my kind of mindset was, you know, but if you're going to make a cell phone game popular, why this one? But, you know, it's look, I understand. I'm thankful that, you know, this has gotten more people into gaming and, you know, has helped this format, the phones is, as much as, you know, sometimes we make fun of phone games because they don't have tangible controllers. It's a little different. I'm thankful that this has brought more people into video gaming and, you know, and all that good stuff.
Well, and this is the thing, too, is that I knew people who didn't consider themselves gamers until Angry Birds. And these are now people who own consoles, you know. I knew people who were just like, oh, I don't like any video games for X, Y, and Z reason. But there'll be that one game that comes out that's suddenly like, holy crap, I like video games. And it could be something as simple as this. We shouldn't discount people who enjoy their, quote, casual games. Because it could be the healthy, safe introduction to gaming that people need. And honestly, I think this game's pretty fucking funny.
All right. Well, there it is, your classic game of the week, Angry Birds. Yes, it's 10 years old.
And it, again, is notable as being the first mobile game only, or something that started as a mobile game that I have brought out
Is it really?
I really think that it is.
Huh. Wow.
So, okay. And it specifically was iOS and Nokia.
Interesting. Akuma JP says, while the geeks in Japan are playing an addicted to Puzzle Dragon here, I think the series Puzzle and Dragons was... they've tried to do here, but hasn't really quite had that same level of success. Because there was the Mario and Luigi one that they put out and wasn't.
Speaking of puzzle games, you know what game I would love to have a release on, like iPhones or something? And one of my favorite SNES games is Puzzle and Des. I think that would be a really good thing to bring out for iOS. I mean, I don't know if you've played it that much, but I was super addicted to it back when my only access to it was as a ROM.
I'm ready for Pokemon Puzzle League to make a comeback.
Have I done Puzzle and Dust as a classic? I might have.
Maybe.
I'm pretty sure I did.
I'm ready for Pokemon Puzzle League to make a comeback, or whatever you want to call it. Is it a Tetris Attack or Panel Depone, whatever? I'm ready for that series to come back.
Planet Puzzle League?
Yeah, I was playing a Puzzle League on the DS or 3DS, one of
those. DS.
Yeah.
Yes, because I remember when Shane would he downloaded that, remember, because they had that share thing, the share demo thing that you could cash it to your DS or whatever.
Yeah.
And so he played that the entire E3 that we were there because he wouldn't reset or turn off his...
Was it that? Or I remember that but it was Meteos.
Oh, maybe it's Meteos.
The year that, because that was me and some people I knew at the time. Because you could download demos to your DS,
yes,
right? And so they had E3. So we downloaded the Meteos demo and we played it all night. And we tried to keep it on our DS like as long as we possibly could before inevitably like it shut off because of a dead battery or something.
Rob, so Puzzle and Des, I did for episode 293.
Oh, wow.
So that was a while.
It's been a little while.
Good game. Good game.
Hard. Over 500 kinda episodes
hard.
Ago.
But, I mean, I'm going to... is Nichibutsu still around? Because maybe I should poke whoever owns the license for it.
All right. Let's travel around the game world real quick and take a look at some rapid-fire news. So a quick look at some other things that are happening in the gaming world. Loki, we'll start with you.
So they just released a trailer. 20th Century Fox released a trailer for a movie called Free Guy, which looks fantastic. It's basically Grand Theft Auto Online, the movie. But it's the premise is that Ryan Reynolds' character is an NPC in this game. He doesn't realize he's an NPC. And then all of a sudden finds out he's inside of a game. And he decides that he doesn't want to be an NPC anymore.
This sounds so ridiculous and exactly like the type of thing we would expect Ryan Reynolds to do.
It's fantastic.
Yeah,
it looks hilarious.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see it. So that's coming out in July. So check out the trailer if you haven't seen that yet.
Okay.
Because it looks very sweet. We're getting a lot of good trailers, actually. On Monday, we're going to be getting a brand new the new Ghostbusters movies. You're going to be having the trailer for that.
Yeah.
And then we got Wonder Woman 84.
Wonder Woman 84 was today, yeah.
Yeah, so lots of good stuff.
Mm-hmm. We also get Golden Globe nominees tomorrow if you're into that award-watching sort of thing.
Yes. So I got some news about Space Channel 5. And no, it's not that I saw a cosplayer today dressed up like Ooh La La. It is, unfortunately, that Space Channel 5 VR has been delayed again. Now it will be coming out in spring 2020. So if you had your hopes to play Space Channel 5 VR before the end of the year, sorry. Not going to happen.
Well, again, game delays should be celebrated in some ways. So as long as it's going to make it better.
Yeah.
Put more chew in there. All right. Moving on to something that was spotted in Microsoft's store. This could be very interesting. Some remasters in 4K of Vanquish and Bayonetta. Vanquish was spotted first in the Microsoft store. It's going to have 4K visuals running in 60 frames a second on Xbox One X. The launch date is supposed to be February 18th. And then Bayonetta was spotted not much longer after that, also on the Microsoft store. Potentially Game Award announcements that got leaked a little early. Don't know.
I don't know if that would be that big.
Something to keep in mind. We haven't had an update on Bayonetta 3 in quite some time. We know that's something they're doing for the Switch. We just kind of don't know the status. It would seem logical that we bring Bayonetta back into, you know, consciousness with some type of remaster or rebranding of the first two games. We did have the original Bayonetta on PC, and I know that upped-res the
original.
Same
with Vanquish,
so yeah, so I don't know if maybe these are just the PC versions or whatever, but I also don't think they went all the way up 4K, and maybe they actually went in and really, like, you know, did some, you know, different stuff with the assets and stuff and maybe are really making it look nice. We don't know until we see the actual details and not just a leak through the store. But that does appear to be something that's coming, so that is pretty cool. And then I was going to look at this other story on more Arcade Archive releases coming, but the damn website won't load for me over here. So I don't know if you can help me out, Loki, but I know that the Arcade Archives, which is basically legit MAME on your Nintendo Switch, they have a whole series of games that are going to be coming out. Some of them were announced before, but some were not.
Yeah,
so
they had a stream, I guess, that was on Nico Nico that Hamster announced some more games that are coming to Arcade Archive. These include Kiki, Kai Kai, Tin Star,
Rocky and Rocky,
and Map Mania.
Yeah, Kiki and Kai Kai is not a drag race game, just to be clear.
No. You know what's funny? I remember when I bought like this SNES at the thrift store for $50.
Uh-huh.
Pocky and Rocky 2 was in it.
Oh, how funny.
A game that goes for $150.
So now the full lineup, now that they have those, plus the other titles that they had before. So Suzuki versus Commander, Guerrilla War, Akari 3, The Rescue, POW, Prisoners of War, Frogger, Daytona, Twinbee, versus Balloon Fight, Kiki Kai Kai, Tin Star, Map Mania, and Tecmo Bowl.
Sorry, just giggle at the name Kiki Kai Kai. Anyway, That's cool. Yeah, the Arcade Archive is a very interesting. I kind of think it's like they want $7 a game for those games. I'm not sure they're all worth that. But as they're starting to get more and more like modern releases mixed in there too, I think it's pretty cool. So
we should see some. Let's start making some actual cabinets for them. I mean, that's the trend nowadays. My kids played on the Pac-Man cocktail cab. The arcade one-up one. They want $450 for that thing. I'm like, I'm all due, but like the full size ones are like $150. Why would I pay that? That seems kind of a ripoff at Sam's Club too, which is ridiculous.
Interesting.
But like, I would have thought that would have been much cheaper because you know, it's basically the same thing running in there. There's no additional hardware. I mean, I guess another set of controls, but. Eh, really, it's not that much more expensive.
Boy, it's so funny how like this whole like replica arcade thing is getting bigger and bigger. I mean, certainly with the arcade one-ups, right? You know, like tons of people got those Star Wars ones and so forth. And it seems like they're just making more and more. Like, if I had the space, I would have a whole arcade of those things. Well, and the money, because let's be real, those things are kind of expensive. But
they've dropped them after Black Friday. Some of them are down to, like, I think... I want to say that the Mortal Kombat one's down to like $179 or $199. It's like permanently dropped price now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, they've come down.
That's great. All right. Well, yeah, fun. All right. Well, let's move on and talk about. Thank you for pinch hitting on that story. Darkstalker, you have a couple rapid fire stories for us, right?
I do indeed. One that makes me super happy is that the creator of Danganronpa, Kodaka Kazutaka said that there's a new title, announcing a new title on I can't make my words happen. Why am I so tongue-tied? Announced a title on December 9th, a teasing for it. And this is the direct quote, maybe it's because it was a bad year. I'm feeling down quite a lot this year, but I'll still be able to make this announcement at the end of it, so it's going to be the greatest year. He said this on Twitter. So basically there's going to be a title that's going to be announced, although already, announced for 2020 is Death March Club. But he's also working on a number of other unannounced projects. One, that is a Limit Cross Despair game. Also working with, Uchikoshi Kotaro, an anime collaboration with Studio Perot. And a very dark fantasy-esque mystery quote game in collaboration with Spike Chunsoft. And then there was another update on this that Izanagi Games actually retweeted Kodaka's tweet. And Izanagi Games is the publisher for Death March Club, but they've also registered a trademark for Death Come True in... a Japanese trademark on November 15th, and the domain name deathcometrue.com on November 18th. So keep your eyes open on those. I would like a Danganronpa that's more of an extension of the original Danganronpa and not this V3, because V3, I prefer. I just like all my original Danganronpa characters. But V3 wasn't bad, don't get me wrong. I just couldn't get into the universe of it. And in other news, there's Untitled Goose Game merchandise coming out in the form of socks. But I'm not looking at it as socks. I'm looking at it as a sock puppet. Because it totally is a goose with a beak. And you can go, womp, 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 womp. You can do that. I just, basically, my hand goose just bit your head off. Sorry, Loki. You can have it back.
That's okay. He has his statue goose to protect him there. So that's.
I would have printed my own, but my printer doesn't work, and then I would need also like several different colors of filament to do that.
That's the next game of with all the merchandise
or just really good paint.
Yeah,
true. And I like now the way they printed this too. It's kind of funny because like you would look at it and you'd think okay vertically, but they actually printed it like this. But because of that, the butt feather, or it makes it look like the butt feathers would be like actually how it would be. It's kind of just it's. Not on purpose, but, like, it's pretty cool.
Interesting. All right. All right. Well, let's travel around the world and check out some release dates of some video games coming out very soon, although I imagine this time of year is slowing down a little bit, but we'll check in anyway.
Yeah, but there's still some things coming out. So, like, really this week it's kind of limited to just a few games. So we've got Dragon Quest Builders 2, that's on PC. MechWarrior 5 Mercenaries, also PC. Vampire the Masquerade, looks like they've got an expansion there that's coming out on PC, Mac, and Linux. And we also have this week Detroit Become Human on PC and Project Sakura Wars on PS4.
Yeah, I know Dr. Sakura's been waiting for that Detroit.
Yeah,
you have it pre-purchased, right? You're
no,
ready to go.
I don't yet. Oh, I just because I didn't want to spend the money yet.
Fair.
But
well, maybe cross your fingers and toes. Maybe there'll be a week one discount. Who knows?
Maybe.
All right, we'll go into the Japan and their release dates over there. On the PlayStation 4, we still have some releases this week. Things aren't slowing down over there. Project Sakura Wars is also in Japan this week. That is in a regular and limited edition if you want those. There's also a game called BQM, which is short for Block Quest Maker. So if you want kind of your own quest-making game, that is available, as well as Hollow Knight. Their version of Control, so they get that, you know, one of our Game of the Year contenders. They're getting a localized version in Japan next week of Control on the PlayStation 4. Also, they're getting Ghostbusters, the video game, remastered. So they took it's been out here, the PlayStation 4 version of that, but they took the older one from like 10 years ago and re-upped it for PlayStation 4, and that's getting its Japanese release this week. Mega Aquarium also coming out, and Headliner Novi News. That is all on PlayStation 4. Looking at the Switch, Samurai Spirits, which you might know as Samurai Showdown, getting its Switch release in Japan this week. So that is a big release there. You can also check out Deadly Premonition. I'm sorry, that is not a Japanese release. BQM Block Quest Maker is also out on the Switch, as well as Hollow Knight and Deadly Premonition Origins. No, that's only US. I don't know why that's mixed in here, but it is. So I was trying to see if there's other Japanese. Oh, yeah, Mega Aquarium and Headliner Novi News also there in Japan this week on the Switch. How about the UK, Dark Soccer?
Only a few things. On the 9th, we have Doom Slayers Collection for PlayStation. Also only on PlayStation is Groundhog Day, like Father, like Son. On Switch, we have Shovel Knight Treasure Trove. And I'm going to mispronounce this, but it's a PlayStation game, Avicii Invector.
The music game,
yeah,
with the artist who passed away. Yeah.
Okay. And then on the 12th, New Super Lucky's Tale. It looks kind of cute. Yeah, everything else is the week after, so.
All right.
Just a bunch of collections, it looks like. Yeah. But anyway, that's it for this week.
All right, well,
and
every
no
week.
Mail.
No mail tonight, well.
I just went ahead and just said, just refreshed it.
Spoiler alert. All right. Well, every week we welcome your emails, and sometimes we have them and sometimes we don't. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com is the place to send those emails. I will kind of point out that something we're going to be retooling a little bit for 2020. I'm not going to get rid of the mailbag. I've been threatening to do it because it's so underutilized. We'll keep it. However, I am going to have us incorporate, and I'll talk a little bit about this later because it's going to be a surprise to my co-host, but I will be incorporating Twitter once again into the rotation for those that want to send us tweets, because I think that is a quick way for a lot of you to give comments on the show, as well as ensuring that we're embracing VogNetwork.com as a place to leave your comments on episodes. So we will be incorporating that kind of into a katamari, if you will, of listener feedback.
I prefer the word gestalt.
Gestalt? You don't like katamari?
I like katamari, but I've been watching a lot of Transformer stuff lately.
Mm-hmm. However, until we remodel this segment in the coming weeks, you may remember that if you don't send emails, you do get penalized with talk about RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes.
You get penalized or I get penalized. So, I mean...
Basically, we should just zoom the camera in on Loki while we talk.
So anyway, I kind of do want a multi-camera setup. But anyway.
Or you can just get a camera that you can actually adjust and then like have preset settings.
Well, I could do one of those, kind of like what Paladin Amber does on her stream, is that like she just basically has
multi-camera.
Well, she has multi-cam, but there's also ways you can kind of zoom in on the same shot. Like I could just make another scene with this, but it's just zoomed in on your face. But anyway,
dude, we could totally do multi-cam in using Final Cut.
Well, but you don't broadcast live with Final Cut. This would support it. OBS will support
it. But it would be for other things.
Oh, yeah, for other things.
Yeah.
But anyway, so sadly, Drag Race is off season, so there's not a lot to say there either. However,
I couldn't watch Drag Race UK.
I was just wondering if you were – did you see Drag Race UK and the results?
I did while I was at the bar. At Depot, I watched a little bit of it. There's some talented queens on there. I just need to sit and binge the whole thing. Uh-huh. I just thought that their prizes were completely underwhelming for what they were doing.
Well, you know why that is, though. Because of the BBC. You can't have the because it's basically taxpayer funded. They don't. You can't give away prizes on the BBC, basically.
That's stupid.
Yeah, it's a little different. The game show rules are different over there.
So they're just basically playing for props.
Well, they're
to become a Rue girl.
They're playing for being on television is what it is. Yeah.
Well, if it gives them, you know, I just hope that doing this actually gives their careers a lot more, you know, than what they had before.
I'm also bracing for 2020 and the inevitable Rue burnout because they're already casting for season 13. Season 12, we don't even know the premiere date for. We know there's an All Stars 5 in the can. We're just waiting for it.
A couple of friends.
But then Drag Race Canada is coming up. Drag Race Australia is coming up. And then there's the German one with Heidi Klum is hosting it. You know, she got a lot of shit for, like, you're not a drag queen. You're a bio. But, like, Heidi Klum is super. And there's a great – if you listen to Alaska and Willem's podcast, they kind of go off and defend Heidi Klum, as she should be defended. She's a huge support. Like, the show wouldn't happen if it wasn't for Heidi Klum, and she's a huge proponent of
Willem
that performance.
Willem surprises me, though, with all those anti-trans things that Willem said where Courtney Act – came in and basically did a lot of damage control. And then to have someone who just seems like that polarized into the I guess a little bit more patriarchal side of drag and sexuality to come out and support basically a bio queen. I mean, and I will use the term bio queen or femme queen, but I do not use the term faux queen because a queen is a queen. It's drag. But, you know, one thing I have to say that actually made me super happy, even though this is a little bit of old news, is that Dragula this last season made me super happy because we had a drag king who won.
I think that's cool, but I don't like Dragula as a show. But I think that I'm happy for what it did.
I've met the Boulay brothers a couple of times, but it was all at DragCon.
Cool. Yeah.
They're gonna actually be really nice.
They're
people.
Bringing them here to Sacramento.
Oh, cool. I'd love to see the Boulay brothers. I went to the ball. That was fun. And they had a lady queen. Crap. It's also one that I really like, but my brain just completely farted on her name.
Yeah.
But Landon Sider, I've seen perform. I was high as a kite. It was DragCon. Okay, it was my first time ever having edibles. And it was also post-gastric bypass, like 6 months after. So I eat this whole cookie that looks like a Samoa. That's why I bought them, because it looked like fucking delicious Samoa. And it was a delicious cookie. And it kicked in an hour later when we were at Hamburger Mary's in Los Angeles, and I was fucked. I couldn't move.
You know, Landon's going to be here, or at least according to Landon's website, Landon's going to be here at one of the local bars in mid-December at some point.
Really?
Because my King friends are
Depot?
Thrilled.
Or Sidetracks?
I think it might actually be Badlands.
Badlands, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, no, I would totally be down to see Landon because I've seen him perform a couple of times and just an absolutely astounding drag performer.
Yeah. All right. That's the end of the punishment. So, participate at orangelaungeradio.com is the place where you can send us emails for a future week. In all seriousness, we have to get that out of our system while we can, because there won't really be punishment anymore once we incorporate tweets and Vogue Network feedback into that. So moving on. All right. Let's get into some more gaming news, and then we're going to take your calls if there's any via our Discord server, which you can join our Discord server at vognetwork.com. That's vognetwork.com/Discord is the place to join our server. Let's move on with some more news. Loki.
There is a rumor that Microsoft is going to release their next Xbox console with also a version of the console that will be discless as well. Code name Lockhart would be kind of their discless version of the next system they have. I mean, yeah, I guess that makes sense. I mean, since they're already doing that with the Xbox One.
This strikes me as a way, I mean, again, it's rumor, but it's one of those rumors that adds up. And for me, I think it would be about them trying to get the lowest dollar amount possible when they announce this thing, because they could come out. Let's assume that the new Project Scarlet, whatever they end up calling it, let's assume it's a $599 console or something. You know, it's pretty pricey because of the technical oomph that they put in there. It may not be. I am completely theorizing. OK, just to make my point, but let's make believe that Project Scarlet is going to be a $599 console with all the bells and whistles. Well, if there's going to be a scaled down version potentially with no disk drive parts or any of that stuff, maybe that will be the $499, and then that way they can say Project Scarlet or Xbox 2, whatever it's called, starting at $499. That's how they're going to keep the message low to potentially try to low cut whatever PlayStation 5
is. But I'm kind of curious though, like, if those price points are even a problem anymore, considering that we have people buying $1,200 phones. I mean,
yes, they are. Look at what happened with PlayStation 3, and what happened to Xbox One. It's not
a while ago though.
Yeah, but it's also about responding to your competition, and so they have to have a way to potentially lowball, not just lowball PlayStation 5, but in case they have accidentally highballed PlayStation 5, they have to have a place where they can kind of compete with PlayStation 5. Because remember the last time we went through this whole thing was the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One reveals. Remember that PlayStation 4 reveal at E3? I mean, as we start in these next couple weeks to look back on the top gaming moments of the decade, that PlayStation 4 conference at E3 was one of the biggest gaming news moments of the decade, because it wasn't just about what they were announcing, but fucking how they did it. Like, they came out and just, like, slapped Microsoft across the face with that message. I mean, remember that video with the whole, like, here's how you can let your friend play a PlayStation 4 game, you know, and just hand the game. Like, that was some big dick energy in a way. Like, that was BDE before its time. And
you it know, was pretty great.
We hadn't seen, you know, that kind of thing. So I think Microsoft maybe just, you know, again, I talk a lot about positioning the chess pieces, but that's really what it is. So I think when they're looking at a diskless console, they could be positioning the chess pieces to possibly have to respond to, shit, we've priced our console more expensive than Sony's. We can't have that happen again. So we're going to have a high ball and a low ball. That's my thought.
Maybe, yeah.
For what it is. So,
given that we just came off of the Ghostbusters chat, this is what went through my head the moment that was said. It's true. This console has no disc.
So, you know, and as digital is becoming more and more the way, I don't think these consoles are bad. You know, if that's the way people want to save money, then cool. I'll probably buy one that has a disc drive, but we'll see. I also understand the reality is, even though I can cling to my disc and everything, fucking the patches, your whole game redownloads anyway. Like, I can go get my No Man's Sky PlayStation 4 disc. Do you think that's – I mean, technically it is a game. It will run if I'm not connected to the internet. I can play that. No. Can I play it not on the internet?
No.
I think you can, but your information – no, because I remember in the early days you were booted offline. So, yes, you can play it not on the internet. Your stuff just doesn't sync over. But my point is, like, the game is completely different now, right? They've released how many patches for No Man's Sky? What's on that disc is not even the game at this point. So kind of interesting. I don't know. Now,
shenanigans.
DJ Rama S wonders, with a diskless system, makes you wonder if you can connect an external Blu-ray drive and run the games. Maybe. I mean, we won't know until they announce.
Kind of like having a super drive with your Mac.
Yeah, but it would have to be an Xbox branded drive. They're not going to just let you buy any old third party drive and run it that way to try to save money. They're not going to openly let you save money like that. But it would be interesting. So. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about something that may or may not be like a type of announcement for the Game Awards that got leaked early. We don't know. But what we do know is that some box art for Resident Evil 3 leaked out. So just like the Resident Evil 2 remake this past year, which was pretty darn well received. And I know, Dark Soccer, you played through a bit, or you and Dan played through a bit of it. And you well received it for the most part, right? Yeah, enjoyed the remake. Are you excited to hear that Resident Evil 3 appears to be happening because of this confirmed box art?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew it was going to be coming out.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Sorry. I didn't enjoy it as much as I liked Resident Evil 2. But I just hope that they don't make what was it? Mr. X? Mm-hmm. Or Tyrant, whichever one he was in that game.
Nemesis is the big,
that was it. That, not as annoying.
Yeah.
I mean, he's probably going to be as annoying as Mr. X is.
Well, some people are responding to this kind of redone art saying, yuck, or yikes, you know, like Nemesis does not look good in this. So, but it'll be interesting. I mean, if Resident Evil 3 does well, then I wonder if that means Resident Evil 4. That could be a pretty big deal if they go. I mean, this just seems like a necessary step to get to that Resident Evil 4 redo. That would be really, really something. So we'll see. But it looks like this is happening, and I imagine we're probably going to get a trailer of some sort during the Game Awards. That just seems like what's going to happen. We'll see. Will it maybe support VR like the most recent Resident Evil game did? Don't know. I mean, we can make shit up all we want, but hopefully we'll get some kind of confirmation this week. This seems like a likely Game Awards thing, but we'll find out soon. All right. Meanwhile, Darkstalker, you have an interesting – this game is like several years old, but yet is being covered in the news this week.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's because it's getting a new release. That's why I was looking at it. Wasn't this game already out? But maybe it's getting some more attention just because of what's going on with I guess, current events, you know. I know I picked it for a reason.
Can I quickly put an addendum on the last thing from a chat comment?
Sure.
Shane is in chat. Shad Starzik, who says, Jeff Keighley, or whatever it's spelled, said Resident Evil 3 will not be at the Game Awards. It's more likely a State of Play thing. I forgot. Yeah, PlayStation did announce they have a State of Play this week, and it's very possible this was actually a part of that. Mm. So thank you for the update from apparently Jeff Keighley's denying that Resident Evil 3 was planned for the Game Awards. Sorry, Darkstalker.
Yeah, I honestly actually then don't know why I picked this one.
I figured it was because of the mainstream coverage and how it tied into like what they were talking about in the story. I thought it was a neat story.
Well, it is. It was posted by KTUU, an Anchorage, Alaska news station, NBC affiliate. But the game Never Alone, it did get a release in November 2014 on the 18th. And it was a game that was actually done in coordination with a tribal council in Alaska, with their elders and the various indigenous people there, and they did an interview with the creator, and I mean, since it came out, it was featured over in 1,000 publications, downloaded 3.5 million players, and selected for over 75 Best of the Year Game Awards with multiple winners, including BAFTA, the British Academy Award. And it's been on a number of multiple consoles and outlets. But the big thing is that the game Never Alone seemed to have really set a stage and a precedence for having more games like this that bring in ways of celebrating cultures that have been, you know, pretty much wiped out, or I'd say highly damaged, if not completely wiped out, by colonialization. The creator was a native Alaskan, you know, someone who grew up with that culture and seeing the damage that was done by this. So they went in and we're just talking about how bringing this kind of universe to life and bringing that awareness to this aspect of culture has really set a stage for doing other kinds of games like this. And just the joy, you know, there are people who are in that culture who have played the game and found just an absolute love for it.
Yeah. I remember when this game first came out, certainly the cultural, and it's interesting because we talked earlier about art as a message, and art can be a bad thing, but art can also be a great thing. And in this case, we've got a great thing because it was bringing some of those experiences and those stories to the video gaming format. And when the game first came out, I thought that was neat about it. But now with this KTUU story, and really showing like, no, we consulted with people. We got, we showed this to some of the elders. We got that. But I thought that really enhanced this.
And this is now the other reason why I know I brought this up is because they're working on a sequel. So officially said they're working on the sequel for this game.
Okay.
But it's one that I played it. It was a great game. And I'd say if nobody out there, you know, if you maybe haven't heard of it or haven't played it, first of all, I don't know what rock you were under. But second of all, you really should play it.
And check your PlayStation or Xbox library, because I believe it's been both on Games with Gold and PlayStation. I know it's been on the PlayStation Plus.
Steam.
It may have been an Epic Game Store thing. So I know there was a second platform it showed up on as well. So
I think I did, though. When I bought it, I got it on Steam when it came out.
Yeah, when it, yeah.
But it's absolutely gorgeous game. The other thing too is that it really got me to thinking that with this consulting of, you know, the people whose culture it reflects and affects, I was thinking back to what they did for Frozen 2, which I haven't seen yet, but they worked with the indigenous peoples of the Scandinavian areas to make sure that they portrayed the indigenous people there properly. And that we're really getting to see, you know, I would even say it's been just in the last decade, we've started to see more respect for Native cultures. I mean, that is, I mean, we still had the bullshit with the Dakota Pipeline. That's some garbage. And we've seen the fallout. They were right. Hello. But, you know, we've started to see more of an interest in hopefully a revitalization and preservation of these cultures. And if video games can do this, I'm all for it. And bring that awareness to other people. You know, even if the game creator was in the culture, I think that doing something like this is what cultural appreciation is, mm-hmm. instead of appropriation. Mm-hmm. You know, appropriation is when you are taking something from another culture with no respect to the context of how these things are and are trying to turn your own profit for it without benefiting
when
them.
When Cher dresses up like a Native American, that's, you know, the 70s were a different
or
time.
Or white girls with dreads.
Right, okay.
Yeah. You know.
So.
But I'm saying that you can take, you know, like, for example, say that I went out and I developed a game about gecko in Kyoto, right? Which I fucking love to do. I would, in doing so, consult with, you know, maybe a few proprietresses of an okia, speak to gecko if I could. And then make sure that when I'm putting out a game like that, I would have resources that link to these things. Or if I was going to do a local Native culture, I would make sure I did it in conjunction with their tribal leaders, with their historians, and then give resources. And in the case of something like that, I would give money to those groups, like a portion of my profits.
This is completely tangent, so I apologize, but apparently we actually have an Anchorage local listening to the show. So Strudes89 is in our chat going, oh, hey, that's my local station. And I was like, because I couldn't remember. I was like, is that the station where there was the on-air reporter that was doing an investigation into a pot business? And then she says, after the port is done, she's like, and I have to say, I'm the owner of the place. So fuck it, I'm out. She says it live on air and walks off the set. That whole thing, you have to look for this clip on YouTube. It's great. And apparently that was in Anchorage when that happened. Because I remember, I'm like, I know it was an Alaska station. Was it Anchorage or was it Juneau? What was it? So thank you to Strudes for confirming that was an Anchorage incident that happened there. Oh, it's on YouTube, Pixel Bogus. I wish I had this stuff on demand more or had the setup Bobby had where I could pull it up real fast. Maybe in the near future. I'm considering some of these other ideas. But yeah, look it up on YouTube. I wish I remembered her name. I don't remember. But maybe like Anchorage reporter quits on air or something like that. Ought to find it. Tiger Claws or somebody's on the case now and will find the YouTube for you. But it's a great moment because the reaction of the anchor, she's just like, okay. All right. You know, she's just like, she doesn't know what the hell to do. It's great.
So I want to put out a challenge, though, going back to my story.
Thank you, Matt. Yes.
I would like for people to find a game that highlights and celebrates a Native culture in your area. And then I want you to tweet me a link to that game at Dark Sakura on Twitter. You tag me, tag OLR. But I want to see if you not only just go out and find, I want you to play it. Play it and tell me what you've learned. If you've already played it, great. At me the game, tell me what you've learned. But I'd like for people to look outside of just standard, oh, this is fun entertainment, or oh, this is a pretty game entertainment. And find a game that teaches you something about a culture other than your own.
All right. We'll see. If
real teaching, not just a romanticized version.
Let us know if you get any tweets. I'd be super curious.
Yeah, not so. The Indians shared the food with the pilgrims and bird, and everybody was happy forever.
Something of that culture and not, you know,
even
changed
if,
by another.
And even if it's, you know, the horrible impact that Western colonialism had on these cultures, mm-hmm. I want you to learn something. I want you to use video games and show them as an educational tool so that I can then go back to my mother and go, ha, I told you. Kidding, right. Kidding. No, I just want people to learn something.
Okay. Let's move on. A game that maybe – I don't know. Some people think this is a giant troll. Some people think this may be a game where you would learn something. I don't know. Let's talk about the Jesus game. We have to talk about the Jesus game. What is this all about, Loki?
So the game is called I Am Jesus Christ, and it's a game made by a developer who does a lot of these simulator games.
And you know I have B-roll.
I'm glad you do.
Thank you.
That's fantastic.
Uh-huh.
So the developer has made like other simulator games such as Thief Simulator, House Flipper, that type of thing. And it looks like a really weird like VR type of game where you perform miracles, basically. And it doesn't really look real. Like I watch this and it reminds me a lot of this YouTube channel I watch called Butterside Down, where they just all you see is the dude's hands all the time and it does weird stuff. But yeah, you have the performing miracles such as
pretty.
You're just gonna full on stop
walking across water.
Why is everyone white? Jesus wasn't my white man.
And then this it gets really weird where they're all like, now it's like, wow, you get to hang out with your friends, literally.
Well, they weren't really his friends.
Yeah. And then he ascends to heaven. And then wait, after the credits, look at that. The sequel, Resurrected.
Anyway. Why is he white?
It's Flea points out, for the people who would actually care about this game, Jesus is white, LOL. So hard facts, hard truths in our chat.
Anyway, yeah, Logie. So it's the publisher Playway SA. They've done a bunch of different games. It's weird though because they have a lot of different. It's not like it's a new thing. They have like the car mechanic simulator stuff, cooking simulator, which is actually a pretty popular VR game that they have. So they have some actual solid games in their portfolio here. But it seems like that they're kind of developed by different developers and all published under the same group. But, I mean, I don't know. The other games are kind of like VR stuff.
Maybe they decided there's money to be made in this industry. And let's be real. There's money to be made here. So why not?
But they have a whole ton of games that are on here. But a lot of these managers, simulators.
I'm going to just say what y'all are thinking. I can't wait to see the live streams because there's going to be live streams and people are going to do some really heinous things. So let's bring on the live streams. So, I mean, like what happens if you lose? Like, how does that work? Like that's what we didn't see in that. Or is that.
You just let the people die.
I don't know. What happens to that old lady if you don't wave
your
hands?
Is this the Jesus version of The Boys, where he's like, well. I can't save you, so we'll just kill everybody.
I don't
know. Erase the evidence.
So we'll see.
Questbuster says, I guess it's more a faithful Jesus sim than the fight of the gods.
Sia Tiberian chat suggests.
Jesus RP.
You just miracle yourself into winning. So, anyway. Moving on. Let's talk about Star Wars and how it's going to work together with Fortnite. Yep, you heard me. So Star Wars and Fortnite are going to be coming together because a new exclusive scene from The Rise of Skywalker, or Star Wars Episode 9, as I'm sure you all are aware of, will be shown in Fortnite at the Risky Reels. It's a theater located in Fortnite. This was all revealed via...
Aren't you supposed to be playing a game and not just sitting there watching, like, video? I mean,
Fortnite has apparently taken some things from PlayStation Home and run with it. I don't know what to think about this, but that's what they're doing. So, December 14th, 6 days before the film is out, a new and exclusive scene from the movie will be in Fortnite. It's probably just going to be like BB-8 doing something cute confirmation that not Baby Yoda is going to be in the movie. No,
How much is Epic paying for that kind of privilege? Or vice versa.
I don't know. It's going to be shown at 2:00. I don't know if you have to pay. It's in Fortnite.
Well, no, I mean, like, because it's in Fortnite, like, how much do they have to pay Luke, Disney?
It's a publicity thing. I don't know.
I'm sure it's
probably not going to be that big of a scene either. It's not going to be, I mean, I would.
It's the end of the movie!
So Nifty805 says, is Fortnite getting emo Kylo Ren? And then Questbuster says, may the Fortnite be with you.
Oh, God. All right. Let's see. So recently there was a Stormtrooper skin that was added into the game. So you have that as well if you want to go cosplay in Fortnite when you go watch the new clip. I can't believe I just said that, but I did. Anyway, there it is. And yeah, Tiger Claw with the reality. That clip will be online immediately. Yeah, I'm sure people are going to be like live streaming it. So that's why I think the clip is not going to be that big a deal. It's going to be a short clip.
I'm glad I don't have to play Fortnite.
I know, right?
Or just, you know, not watch the clip and enjoy the movie.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, we're going to get to some calls. So if you want to be on the show, you can join our green room over at vognetwork.com. That's vognetwork.com/Discord. And that will get you in the Discord server. And you can call in and we'll be bringing some calls on air. I don't know if we have any last minute stories.
I looked. It's pretty barren out there. There was a rumor. Okay, so there was a rumor that that they're going to be porting some more PlayStation 4 games over the PC, Horizon Zero Dawn. But I don't know if that's the case. Apparently, the rumor is coming from the person that predicted Death Stranding or leaked Death Stranding or something.
Yeah, like I was going to say we know that Death Stranding is coming. Is this really interesting?
So, I don't know.
All right.
We'll see.
All right. We do have somebody waiting in the green room, so let's get to a quick call. Hi, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hey, Rob. This is Metal Mayhem. How are you?
Hey, Metal Mayhem. I'm good. What's on your mind, buddy?
Excuse me. Yeah, not too much. You were covering it at the top of the show. I thought I talked about...
Hey, Metal Mayhem, just going to interrupt you real quick. We're getting a little bit of echo when you're talking, so please try to make sure you're away from speakers or anything like that, and go ahead and get your question out.
Yeah, sorry, I'm using my webcam because my headset's fouled up. I'm trying to move around the best I can. Since it was brought up at the top of the show, I thought I'd talk about... the PlayStation in its 25th anniversary. Since the three of you have been using PlayStations in one form or another for quite some time, I want to ask you what initially drew you to the system.
Sorry, ask the question one more time. It was a little feedbacky there at the end.
I was just asking, what drew you to the PlayStation?
What do you think of PlayStation?
What do we think?
What convinced you to buy a PlayStation?
All right, gotcha. I'm gonna drop you back in the green room. But thank you. We'll take on the question here in studio. Thanks, Metal Mayhem. Take care, buddy.
Final Fantasy 7.
I was going to say, I think we kind of hit on it in the opening segment, but Metal Mayhem might have joined the show a little late. What specifically drew you to PlayStation? We did tell the stories about buying PlayStation, but maybe we didn't really get into the why. I mean, I mentioned, sure, that Final Fantasy 7 and that Nintendo 64, but was there, like, other stuff with that? And I think maybe the allure of the CD being a way to do that, to play games, I think was maybe part of it. Not that I necessarily needed another CD player, but that was certainly a thing. And I'm trying to remember if Symphony of the Night was out yet, because I remember that was a game that really sold me on PlayStation as a format, because I think specifically with that game, it showed that something like two-dimensional, like Castlevania or the original Castlevania 4, could still be done very well on PlayStation. So I think really like Castlevania Symphony of the Night was another one of those big, big releases that showed, hey, not everything has to be like 3D polygon like craziness, but we can do some other types of stuff as well. So there's that as well. Darsakura, was there a little bit more like the why? Like what was it about PlayStation that drew you to that versus Nintendo 64? Or I guess maybe Sega Saturn.
I didn't know anyone had a Nintendo 64 and PlayStation came out before Saturn. Mm-hmm. So that was it. It was what was there, what I had access to.
What were the early games you were playing? You were probably playing it before we were.
Toshinden. Hmm. Jumping Flash 2. I'm trying to think what else I was playing.
I know another big one was Bust. Well, I still...
Pandemonium.
Out of habit, I still call it Bust a Groove because that's what it was in the U.S.
Yeah, well, that was after I'd already moved out here. So, yeah, I had Bust a Move. Best to Move 2.
lots of the Bimani. I think I have like every Beatmania home version, like 5-key Beatmania. And just a lot of that stuff. Dan and I, one of his requirements for our relationship was that I beat Castlevania Symphony of the Night, or as it was over there, Nocturne in the Moonlight. It was in the Dracula X series, which I did. And you probably have echoes of the past of me screaming about taking forever to find another jewel ring and trying to get my Yotsutsuna or Yatsutsuna, whatever the blade was called. And so Dan and I actually still quote that game too. I'm interested in this. And I thought it was funny they got his both voice actors, the Japanese and the English one, for Bloodstained for the librarian.
Yeah.
Or for, what was his name? D.
Yeah, the equivalent of.
Yeah.
You know, another game that was huge on PlayStation and really kind of like selling on that console, another music game that we have yet to mention, but I remember the first time, and this was from a demo disc, I remember the first time I played Parappa the Rappa and the first stage in that game, and it was like, holy shit, I'm playing a cartoon. Like, literally, that was like a moving, fluid cartoon. And it was – I know we always kind of think of video games, and it was like, oh, Super Mario Brothers 2 looks like a cartoon. And then on Super Nintendo, you know, but, like, it was like with PlayStation, with how fluid it moved and, you know, kind of literally coming off the page with the types of graphics – I remember just being really thrown, like, for a loop in a good way by Parappa the Rappa's style. So some different answers so that we don't repeat ourselves too much on that question there. But, yeah, I'm sure a lot of people, looking back on PlayStation, I bet there's a lot of people that didn't come into it with PlayStation 1. You know, we all did, but I bet there's some people that didn't really discover PlayStation until PlayStation 2 or maybe PlayStation 3 because of PS2 being a DVD player, or just the fact that maybe you're a little younger or what have you. And so you haven't maybe, you know, you were still a baby when PlayStation 1 was still all the rage, but, you know, you're a kid when PlayStation 2 happened. So anyway. All right. Well, Metal Mayhem was the only one we had in the green room for now. So I guess we'll go ahead and close up that portion there. And Loki says we didn't have any last minute stories, so that brings us towards the end and final thoughts and all that good stuff. So I do want to thank everybody for tuning into Orange Lounge Radio tonight, and thanks for listening to us. We really appreciate you guys checking us out, whether it was live here at Twitch TV on Sunday nights or if it was via the podcast feed or however you found Orange Lounge Radio. Thank you so much. Help us spread the word. Tell a friend or two about the show, because we are the show where every gamer has a voice. But if the voices aren't out there, how can we air them? So we hope to find more and more people through the coming weeks and on into 2020. So thanks again for being here, no matter how you were here. I guess we will now go around and get some final thoughts for the week. Loki, we'll start with you. Your final thought tonight.
I'm hoping to work more on my game, because that was something else I did this week, was work more on the procedural generation portion of it. Although I'm getting to the point now where, like, I have to do the calculation for which doors, so you can't backtrack. But I was, like, thinking about it the other day. I'm like, what if I just don't do that and have it where you can backtrack, and then I can also incorporate like secrets and stuff that way? I'm like, well, that'd be kind of cool, and that would save me a lot of work, but then I've already kind of started it, and so I don't know.
My final thought is I'll see you guys here Thursday at VOG Network for the Game Awards, co-stream with Bobby Blackwolf, and just a quick cheap plug for my personal channel at Rob Roberts. I will try to get in the habit of doing more streaming, just, you know, with all the changes I've been going through this year with a new job and stuff. It threw me off for a little bit, but I've been having some more weeknights where I'm like, oh, I should do something. Now I'm kind of trying to decide, should I try to play more like Final Fantasy 14 and try to like build up in one certain game as streaming, or should I continue to play a little bit of everything? And I kind of gravitate towards playing a little bit of everything, but Final Fantasy 14 can always be that game when it's like, I don't know what else to stream tonight. I can always play 14. But I do want to play more Pokemon, because I think I only have like maybe captured like 130 or something like that. So I have a lot more Pokemon still to catch in Shield, and doing some raids and so forth. And maybe some of you will raid with me if I live stream it, so I can get a goddamn Snorlax. So that would be pretty cool. So and Shane is saying, yeah, Shane's kind of echoing that there. So I swear I said that before I read your comment there. So that's all my thoughts. Dark Sakura, last but not least, your final thought tonight.
I want to thank the people who've already replied to my Twitter post. If you, again, if a video game taught you something, just reply to my tweet. Or just tag it video games taught me. But yeah, just show me how video games have taught you a thing, a legit, you know, lesson, you know, be it about history or culture or language or psychology, name it. Just link me something or tell me about something that video games have taught you.
A homework assignment from Ms. Sakura.
Well, and but tag it as video games taught me, please.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. All right. Good luck. Hope that takes off. All right, that's going to do it for another episode of Orange Lounge Radio. Thanks again, you guys, for tuning in tonight, and we will see you in 7 days to do it all over again. Have a great week, everybody, and good night.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or VOG Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.